Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, 2 minutes past the hour. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That, by God, is where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room. The rollicking, madcap, merry, zany, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours. This program is live Monday through Friday. Jump right in, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be greeted by the likes of Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has chosen to keep his space-folding abilities to himself this evening and is not, in fact, Man Cave. This program is live. It is the 26th day of December 2016, and, well, I had a nice little break Saturday and Sunday, and let's get at it. As the saying goes, coffee breaks over, back on your heads, our heads. And yes, topic in the chat room, thank you for putting that up there, Sparky. Topic in the chat room is happy birthday, Ferg. It is my son's 21st birthday. Agnes and my son's 21st birthday. Our son's 21st birthday. And of course, for many of you, you've kind of heard him grow up too. So yes, he's 21 this evening. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation. We try to raise $200 every evening so as to keep bills paid and keep things rolling along, you know, so we can keep on being independent, progressive broadcasting that actually offers anyone who wants it a voice to, you know, share thoughts, share impressions. You know, no right-wingers and no right-wingers, no assholes allowed. But good progressive conversation, well, that's how we keep it going with trying to raise, you know, and it comes in $5 at a time, $10 at a time. And thank you very kindly to everyone who does contribute to help keep things on the air. So, you know, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13. And we'll just do something with that half a penny. I don't know. So that's where we are this evening. If you would like to help keep the broadcasting going, go to the Contribute tab at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click it. And if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, just click that box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and it happens automatic-like. Okay? If not, just put in whatever amount you want, click Next, get to the next screen, make your PayPal, your credit card, whatever choices, and you will be a part of the reason that listener-supported progressive conversation radio exists. So it's about 5 minutes past the hour. This is, of course, Moran Monday, which we don't have a lot of Moran Mondays that fall after Christmas Day, but this is one of them. And it's been kind of bizarre here. We got up around 60 degrees. Charleston got up to 70. Which is really kind of weird in retrospect, because 21 years ago, I mean, it's sort of seared into my memory that evening. Agnes and I left our home on Christmas evening. My mom was just pulling the turkey out of the oven, and the snow had piled up to about a foot. and you couldn't see stripes on the roads or anything. And we crept very slowly in four-wheel drive low out to the highway, and the interstate was no better because they weren't plowing those either on Christmas. No. Not when you have to pay triple time to do it. No. And so we crept on down to Charleston. Ferg was born the next day, and it was freezing. It was freezing. Probably about a foot of snow on the ground. And today, 21 years later, and I understand, weather is not climate, climate is not weather. But still, last year it was every bit as warm on Christmas Day. This year it was warm on Christmas Day. Today it's almost spring-like. And there's nothing like a weekend Christmas to drive people running into the streets come Monday. But we had a lovely time of it yesterday. Nice. I think I did the best standing rib roast I've ever done in my life. Didn't finish it on the gas grill, did it entirely on the hardwood smoker, and it was perfect. And the smokiness in the drippings made for the most exquisite pan of Yorkshire pudding. I tell you what, it was wonderful. And so we enjoyed it all, and we still got more cooking to do. But it was low-key, and it was relaxed. Because in between rounds of running back and forth to the smoker, I ran across a story about the official Christmas statement of the Republican National Committee. The Republican National Committee issued a statement calling for us to welcome a new king. Yeah, really, I'm not kidding. A new king. And the way it read, it didn't sound like they were talking about Jeebus. So that kind of got my hackles in a bit of an uproar, because I really was. I was trying to be very very Christmassy, very merry. And then, you know, the dirty bastards wouldn't even let us have one day off from their miserable fascist posturing. So there was that. And then a little bit later came the news that George Michael had died. And that was sobering. Because George Michael was 53 years old. And so 2016 looks more and more like a year not to be gracefully ushered to the door, but to be given a Bronx cheer and a kick in the ass without maybe even opening the door. You know what I mean? Yeah. So in the course of the conversations that centered on all of that, I heard from an old friend of ours. An old friend of ours by the name of Eric Bjorn. You probably recall Eric from times past and his alter ego, Pastor Pillow. Well, his other alter ego, Eric Bjorn, which is not an alter ego at all, but perhaps just ego. Well, no, I don't know. There might be discussions over whether that's id, ego, or superego, but we're not. On the day after Christmas, we're not going to get all Freudian. But Eric recently completed a run for Congress down in South Carolina, Stan. And so he probably has a pretty good idea of the inner workings of political campaignings, just exactly how bad the state of disarray is in the Democratic Party, especially in the Confederacy. And we sort of decided that maybe it would be fun to get together and have a little conversation this evening, this being More End Monday, and there being plenty of More Ends to talk about. So let me welcome Eric Bjorn to the horn. Ooh, that rhymes. We're going to make sure that doesn't happen anymore.
It's the only thing that rhymes with Bjorn.
Who knew? then again, it's your last name is probably a shortened form of Bjornage or Bjorange, which is the only word that rhymes with orange.
Right. You know, I was an improv actor for a while, and we had two rules. Number one, don't discount anybody, which is don't say no to what they give you, and don't say orange in a rhyme game.
because there is no word that rhymes with it.
Right. Except Bjorange.
Bjorange. Exactly.
It is so good to be back. I am psyched. I have been looking forward to this time with you for quite a while. Thank you. As have I,
Eric, because we've carried on and had our fun. And you ran a grueling campaign and really busted your chops at it too.
I did.
I think with a little help you might have had an even more of a fighting chance.
Oh, with a little help. Oh my. You know what? You know what though? It is. It's the day or so after Christmas, and I'm sitting here. I'm eating some mashed potatoes, some comfort food this evening, Bob. Because after 2016, if we don't need comfort food, what do we need?
Comfort and joy, comfort and joy, comfort and joy.
I'm just wondering how many mashed potatoes I have to eat before I reach a state of PAX.
Well, okay, so if you've got something left, stick them in the fridge. Let them get good and stiff. Not like that. Probably wrong word. Melt a little butter in a hot skillet. And patty that thing out and roll it in a little bit of flour and fry it in that melted butter.
Oh, my God.
That's a hillbilly potato pancake.
I was going to say it reminds me what you do to a plantain.
But it's not like a wonderful latke, you know, that's grated. This is just a leftover mashed potatoes. You make a patty out of it and you fry it. You dust it in flour, and if you do it right, you get this lovely, crispy, golden exterior, and it's all warm and soft and mashed potato-y in the middle. And I mean, if you cannot derive comfort from that, well, you're screwed.
Comfort and joy. But you know what? And there within, Bob, we have redeemed 2016. I mean,
say so.
We have just brought comfort to a suffering universe.
We may very well have
with a simple carbohydrate.
There's nothing simple about the potato being as it was, you know, part of the Columbian Exchange, and changed the face of the planet.
You're right. It did do that, and you know, I think it's the only the only non-poisonous species of the nightshade plant.
I think the tomato's related to the deadly nightshade too.
Tomato. Wait, you say tomato, I say potato.
Yeah, let's call the whole thing off. 2016.
All right. I you know what? I think we are picking it up right where we left it.
I think we may very well be, but. You were pointing out before we went to air that, well, you know, we're screwed. Is that a jumping off point, or do we want to go back to talk a little bit about your election and the status of the Democratic Party and that sort of stuff?
Let's do all that, and let's start maybe with the fact that, you know, last August, September, I prognosticated. I really believe that Donald Trump would win. I didn't want to believe it. I mean, I did. I fought with it with everything I had in my being to make it not so, you know, to the point of running for U.S. Congress. But I just had a feeling inside me that the circus MC would win the day. And that leaves us at here we are going into 2017 with the orange tsunami before us. My greatest concern after a grueling campaign race and running for Congress and doing so many things and trying to insert myself as much as I possibly could, my greatest fear, Bob, is that people just don't care. Is that people as a population don't invest themselves until Sophie's Choice is before them.
Well, I kind of came to the conclusion that there's a whole bunch of people in this country, roughly around 25% of the eligible voters, who are just some seriously mean sons of bitches.
And those are the ones who voted for Trump.
Right.
But 23%, you know, give or take a couple percent, or who have been, or, you know, so essentially brainwashed by, I mean, how many of us survivors of evangelicalism had this experience over the holiday? In the presence of family and friends being told, well, our nation got down on its knees. Our nation before on its knees and did ask for forgiveness and were blessed with the Messiah of the Donald. How many millions of people have swallowed that false and hideous narrative? Many, you know, I mean, it's just reality.
Yeah, and the word I was looking for is oodles.
Yeah, oodles squared or cubed. Cubed even, cubed oodles, which I'll be having that after the mashed potatoes.
It sounds tasty, especially if you get the flavor the flavor boost packet with it.
Right. Well, I mean, we might have it at the, you know, the potluck dinner where Pastor Pillar shows up. But there's so much to talk about. And maybe the best thing to do tonight is just shoot me questions. And, you know, I mean, last time we connected, you know, I was a writer and, you know, writing for Four Progressives and Pathos and had a readership of quite a few hundreds of thousands and then decided to throw my hat into the political ring. So I have all of that experience to share. But
well,
you know,
I do. I want to kind of go back to the experience of running that campaign, Eric, because it's not everybody who's done that.
Right.
And people who have not run political campaigns might have an idea of what they think it's like. But just on average, when you were in full swing, how many hours long were your days?
Well, and I probably, to my knowledge, I was the only person who worked full-time throughout the entirety of a congressional campaign. And let's clarify so people know that this is a U.S. Congress campaign, not a state office. I worked full-time. We never heard of another candidate out there that did that. I slept 3 to 4 hours a night for 8 months. And so I worked, I campaigned, and I'm, and as you know, I'm a single dad. The last months of the campaign, I was in real physical pain, just from not sleeping. But I did not retire until I answered all emails. I left my personal phone number was public for a district of 700,000 people. I worked my bone, you know, myself to the bone. So it was grueling, to say the least. But and I served my community as a librarian the entirety of the campaign. The thing to realize, and again, I ran against Joe Uli Wilson. So, of course, a chief villainous conservative legislator.
In the parlance, a heel. Right. Whose name isn't even Joe.
Yeah, Addison Graves. But everybody, of course, knows Joe Wilson as the man who screamed Uli at President Obama during a State of the Union address and brought shame not only to the state of South Carolina, but to the nation. It was a racist move. And while many call him Joe Uli Wilson, I did not until deep into the campaign, because I would not give him that titular, which he so enjoys as the racist that he is. So I called him Status Quo Joe. Which, you know, that fits the title of heel, I think, well.
Yes.
But he was, you know, Joe Wilson is a 7-term, 15-year congressman. The one thing everybody told me, supporters and not supporters alike, is you'll never get Joe Wilson to debate you. Well, we had two debates.
He lost them both.
I won both debates, but I lost the election.
Yeah, well, it's funny how that happens.
I mean, I haven't had one person come up to me that didn't say, oh, my God, you made him look terrible. I guess there's a bit of rhetorician in me. But at the end of the day, we did lose, but there was a lot of wonderful things and victories that came out of it. And of course,
well,
let me
ask you a little bit about the process itself.
Sure.
How much help did it, and if any of this is sensitive or can't be, just say can't talk about it. How much help did you get from the vaunted Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee?
You know, that is the single most asked question I get. And it is a question that needs to be answered. And I've answered it on other radio interviews and other media print interviews. And I'll be happy to answer it for you. But it's complex. And thankfully, we got a little time to chat about it.
All you need. All you may ever possibly want.
The most important thing to know at the onset is there would have been no candidate had I not run. In 2014, there were two empty federal ballots. Federal ballots in South Carolina. And a third on which had a despicably fake Democrat. So we're talking about three of seven ballots. This year, there would have been four of eight empty federal ballots.
You're talking about on the Democratic side.
On the Democratic Party side, had not me, and we call ourselves the South Carolina Blue Brothers, put ourselves forward at the last moment. The Democratic Party did an atrocious job of recruiting for federal candidates. I was a, you know, in my district of 700,000 people in the middle of the state and southeastern or southern part of the state, cities like Aiken and Columbia and Lexington, if you know South Carolina well, we would have had no candidate again. And I wasn't sure I was going to run. I had done some volunteer work for Bernie Sanders and put on a really big event. And, given my background, which we can talk about later, I was sure that I had the skill set. But I was hoping, you know, somebody else would come forward as a name, and nobody did. So I filed, I think, second to last day that you could, because there would have been an empty ballot. And in 2016, with Donald Trump as a possibility on the other end of the ticket, there could be no empty ballots for any office, let alone Congress. So, I mean, what support did I get? What support did the party give to itself? It would have been an empty ballot against Joe Wilson, who would have just waltzed off to Washington again, and there would have been nobody shouting out the Democratic Party causes throughout the entirety of the campaign in South Carolina Congressional District 2. As soon as I signed up, a fake Democrat named Phil Black, within one hour at the end, signed up. Phil Black is somebody far to the right of Donald Trump, if you can believe it. Who believes that there's...
Well, I mean, special... South Carolina, I can believe it.
Exactly. He believed in a special Mexican tax. He wanted all African-Americans to be...
What, he wanted to tax special Mexicans?
Yeah, he didn't even have the decency to insult them with the proper ethnic title of Hispanic Latino. He literally called for a special...
Well, they all just Mexicans to us down
here. Right. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even the member of the American Party said, well, you know, it's very hard to tell from a Middle Easterner from a Hispanic. They just come across the border there.
They all look alike to me.
They can say hablo español, and they just come across. So I couldn't believe it. Anyway, I mean,
well, okay, so let me delve in into this a little bit more. Suffice to say that the so-called leadership of the Democratic Party in South Carolina, as is the case with the Democratic Party in Alabama or Mississippi Stan or Louisiana Stan, is moribund.
You could say that. So there would have been no less than four of eight empty federal slots had I not signed up. Now, once the fake Democrat came along, so we had a primary, me against the fake Democrat, but in primary races, voters, you know, rarely spend a lot of time considering the candidates. His name was, he had a simple name, Black. He actually won. This fake Democrat, so fake that he wanted African Americans to be drug tested in the emergency, won in 2014, Bob. He beat a real Democrat. We had a fake Democrat in 2014, and here he was on the 2016 ballot again. And I just signed up at the last second. It's not like I'd planned this for years and years and years. So the state party endorsed me. James Clyburn endorsed me. Those were, you know, great. You know, I felt like I was getting a lot of support at the time. But then again,
but there's support.
It's not as if they wanted a fake Democrat on the ballot, because guess what? Then you can't encourage straight ticket voting throughout an entire region.
Eric, there's support, and then there's walking around folding spending support.
Thank you. Me and the other South Carolina Blue Brothers, which includes Thomas Dixon, who ran for U.S. Senate, and Dimitri Cherney and Mel Hyman, did not feel like we felt like there was a Hadrian's Wall put up between us and Democratic leadership, Democratic Party pocketbooks. But here's the fascinating thing. It's the one thing I wish I could just put it up in the air on a plane and have them spell in the sky. The District 5 candidate in our state had over $700,000 in fundraising, 3 visits from Vice President Biden, right? And he did as well or worse than all of the progressive candidates who had, some of us had less than $30,000. What we learned at the end of the day is money doesn't always matter, but creative messaging and creativity does. In a district with 23% Democratic base, we got 36% of the vote in a year where Republicans stormed the gates unlike ever before. And we were very, very successful with, you know, we didn't raise but $70,000, Bob. That's not a lot these days.
No, that's not even pin money.
It's not, but guess what? It worked.
How badly? How badly gerrymandered is that district you're in?
Well, the whole state is gerrymandered to a point where the only district that ever has, in fact, it's 100%. It's wholly gerrymandered. 6 districts will always probably fall Republican, minus Moses himself with the tablets. But District 6, which is James Clyburn's, will always be Democrat, period. It's set up. There were 7 districts for there always to be 6 of Republicans and 1 Democrat. It's just the way it will always be. I mean, it's disgraceful. It is truly disgraceful. That said, I mean, we did as well, I think, as a candidate ever could do in that district. I mean, I would have taken Fran Person's $700,000 and probably turned it into a victory. But centrists didn't like me that much, Bob.
I imagine that. Now, on the other hand, though, you did, you ran a unity ticket. You said, I'm a proud progressive. You said, I'm with her. You championed issues raised by Bernie.
Yeah, and I was the Green candidate.
And you were the Green candidate.
And a lot of people don't. I don't know if West Virginia is a fusion state. There are only 8 states left in the country where you can run on more than 1 ballot at a time. So after I won the Democratic primary by 44 votes, it shows you how educated the voters are. And I feel like I can say that. You know, listen, voters don't pay attention before they get into the booth. That's a problem. Well, politicians can't say that. Well, if they don't say that, how is it ever going to get better? We won our primary by 44 votes. And then the Green Party came up to me and the other progressive candidates, the U.S. Senate candidate and the 2 other Democratic congressional candidates, and said, would you like to become Green Party candidates? That is run as fusion, so your name will actually appear more than 1 time on the ballot. So I was on the ballot as a Democratic Party. It's a Democratic Party, Eric Bjorn, a Green Party, Eric Bjorn, and then the other candidates. So it was we had a 1. In fact, Bob, you know, it's funny. I was looking at the numbers the other day. I twice outperformed Jill Stein in our district. That is, 2 times as many people voted Green for me than they did for Jill Stein. And I'm still trying to work my head around that and figure out what that means. It means people were eager to not vote for me as a Democrat, but eager to vote for me as a Green Party candidate. But these were not people who voted for Jill Stein. And yes, I did endorse Hillary Clinton, as did Bernie Sanders. I mean, if your choice was between Hillary and Donald Trump, then there's no choice.
Pretty easy.
Not if you believe in civilization.
And so the reason I'm asking these questions, I've got a map in my mind here, and I'm trying to, because there's a whole lot of anger out there, and it's still there, and it's palpable about the DNC.
Oh yeah,
Bruga Bruga Bruga, the DNC, yada yada yada, Bruga Bruga, Argle Bargle Warble Whoosh, DNC.
that was my answer. So
no, let's see,
minus a warble warble.
I'm prophetic like that, but where I'm kind of headed is, you just pretty much said that in 5 out of 6 congressional districts in South Carolina, running as a Democrat is plain straight up an act of futility.
Well, More or less. I think if I had had $700,000, I might have had a chance. But we were blocked in so many ways from that. I mean, a former DNC chair in the country lives just down the street from me, held huge fundraisers for the candidate in another district, but refused. He spat, basically spat in my face. But I couldn't do anything about that. And at the time, there was no sense complaining about it publicly. It was just a matter of just getting the message out as best as I could. And of course, I was working full time, you know, and the current state party chair has critiqued me publicly for apparently not being on the phone all the time asking for money. I guess he preferred me not to pay my house payment and feed my child.
Well, no, see, if you're going to run for office, you shouldn't have a house payment. People who have payments, well, that's so, it's not done.
It's beneath, it's a beneath a candidate for the United States Congress to not be a person of independent means, don't you feel?
I absolutely do.
It's so easy to slip into Pastor Pillow when I'm on the telephone.
So, I mean, I'll just ask, are you disgusted? Now that we see how this is all unfolding.
Oh, well, with the process? Oh, my God, yes. But it's important to understand that the whole thing is like, it's like the white whale. It's complex. I mean, I'm as disgusted as I am satisfied and joyful for our successes. I mean, it was a very, very complex experience.
Is there something there to build on and come back to?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I'd never run so much as for municipal dog catcher. I mean, running for U.S. Congress is no minor feat. I mean, just the just the financial responsibilities, just the accountability structure that's set up. I mean, hell, it costs, you know, over $4,000 just to register, just to file. That's a payment that goes to the state party, by the way. I don't know if most people know that. It's you pay to run for Congress for the Democratic Party. It's a percentage of the salary of the position itself.
Yes.
So you pay $4,000 plus to run for Congress. You pay more than $10,000 to run for Senate. And that's not a bad built-in function. You don't want every Yahoo running for office. You really don't. You want people who are serious about it. And serious people are people who have raised, you know, some change typically. Then you get people like Donald Trump who did it as a joke and accidentally won.
Still convinced of that, are you?
I do believe it began as a joke, and then I've seen enough people drunk on the idea of power over time, and I think that's what happened. I do think it began as a bit of a stunt, but I think he began to believe in himself. I guess he washed his own brain. But, you know, I want to answer questions sort of by the party. You know, the party itself is like, we were never ever national. The DCCC were blocked many events in South Carolina for the second. They can defeat that, but I've got the emails to prove it. You know, I got endorsement. I was allowed to use a copier once in a while. I guess you call that nominal support. But at the end of the day, I guarantee you the establishment Democratic Party doesn't want progressives in South Carolina, and they want them, and let me make this clear, they don't want them in South Carolina much more than they don't want them in a very season for that. South Carolina South happened to have a progressive statewide. Guess what? It changes the dimension completely about how presidents are selected. Usually when I share that theory with folks, they look at me like I got two heads, and then they think about it and go, oh.
No, I didn't. I didn't know. No, I'm sitting here. That makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it does make sense, right? I mean, look, if you go outside of the country and you talk to an economist like Thomas Piketty, who wrote that great book, Capital, if you talk to economists outside the United States, they'll tell you we haven't really been that – the United States hasn't been that different since 1980. We have been consistent economically since, you know, the last 36 to 40, you know, the last generation. There isn't a lot of between Reagan to Bush, you know, when it comes to economic policy. Since we're living in the middle of it, we sure feel the difference between a Bush or a Clinton, right? But the outside world doesn't, the difference of Berger would have represented different. We would have taken a definitive turn to the left. And as much as I have great respect for President Obama, I mean, I think that applies, you know? We haven't had a great turn to the left since the Great Depression, essentially. I don't know. Where am I going?
Well, I mean,
what do you want to know?
I guess I guess you could argue that LBJ's Great Society was leftish, but it
was.
But it was all Vietnam. But it was all mixed in with the Vietnam War. You know, he hamstrung his own presidency with Vietnam. But
sure?
but I think you're right, and maybe that's because the only reason we got that leftward shift in the Great was because of the Great Depression. Had the stock market not crashed, America would have gone on voting for Republicans till hell froze over.
Well, look at the birth of universal health care. Where does that come from? I think on a global basis, it comes out of the rubble of World War II. The nations, you know, that Europe destroyed itself. And they realized, listen, we're not going to make it out of this thing unless we take care of our own for the next couple of decades. The United States didn't have that problem. You know, there were no ruins in the U.S. Universal health care is a product of World War II and all of the suffering that was, you know, more or less universal. Each nation went, listen, we've got to take care of ourselves. We're in a bad state here.
Yep.
And you had meat stamps in Europe all the way, you know, in England, all the way up through, I think, the 70s, early 80s. Rationing, you know, I mean, it lasted a long time. It took a long time to recover from the war. Whereas we had built this military industrial complex and we were fed on the calf and we went, life is good when there's war. And our buildings aren't falling down. And that was Eisenhower's, you know, sayonara plea to us. Please find some other way to make money. Because if you have a military industrial complex economy, you will always need an enemy, and thus you will always find one. So anyways, I ran for Congress. I ran for Congress because nobody else was going to do it. I'm a public librarian, single dad. Well, it's, you know, a rather interesting skill set, and I gave it my all for 8 months, and I walked away on the morning of November 9th, as disappointed as a human could be in the national result, but as proud as a person could be in having given everything he or she could, left it all there, and did it with an amazing small team of incredible volunteers.
Well, let's move from there then, Eric, and sort of look down the road. Based on what you've said about, like, South Carolina's state party apparatus not wanting any progressive Democrats, doesn't that, I can imagine that that's probably the same can be said about Georgia, Mississippi, you know, the rest of the Confederacy. What does that say for Bernie's strategy and any strategy of, say, Keith Ellison?
Well, that, you know, that's very interesting. And I'm, you know, Keith Ellison, as irony would have it, is the congressman in my hometown, you know, where I grew up in Minneapolis. So I was thrilled beyond belief. Early on in the campaign, I was asked to cite some of my political influences. And Elizabeth Warren was one. Bernie Sanders was one. Paul Wellstone, the deceased Paul Wellstone, was one. And I cited Keith Ellison. And I saw him immediately or shortly thereafter, you know, in the election, announced that he was running for DNC. I got very excited. And as irony would have it, the South Carolina Democratic Party chair, Jamie Harrison, is also running for DNC chair. After the absolute abject failure of the Democratic Party from sea to shining sea, I am disappointed beyond belief for the establishment Democrats not to fall on their swords, accept responsibility for their failure, and turn the party in a different direction, and allow the progressive wing to have more of a say. I mean, the re-election of Nancy Pelosi in the House was abjectly disappointing. The fact that DNC leadership and former leadership refuses to have any sort of come to Jesus moment with itself. I almost said I can't believe it, but you know what, Bob, I can believe it.
Well, sure, and I, you know, you talk about DNC leadership. I'm thinking more like
the
party honchos.
Yeah, but this is what people need to know. The former DNC chair lives down the street from me. They didn't write me a check. Instead, they held fundraisers for the other candidates in other districts in my own backyard. I mean, that's the head. You want to talk about the head? I mean, there you go. The former head's right here.
Yeah.
They abjectly rejected me. I mean, and people, you know, they can go out to my website. It's Bjorn2Run, the number 2, BJORN2Run.
I thought that was terribly creative myself.
Yeah, Bjorn to Run with the number 2, or you can find us on Facebook, and you know, I got that interesting name. It's Eric, A-R-I-K, Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. If you search for me on Facebook, look for the picture with the yellow background in the tree. That's my political page. I mean, you can look up our platform up and down, living wage, healthcare is a human right, anti-domestic violence. We made that the core of our campaign because South Carolina remains the fifth most dangerous state in the union for a woman to live. You can't find a hole in my platform that's not Democratic Party, but they would have nothing to do with me because I guess, Bob, because I meant it.
Well, there's that.
I mean, I was sincere. We went to an anti-rape. We had a 2-day anti-rape rock festival here in Columbia. I was the only politician to show up at that. I found out later, the first politician ever to show up to SC Black Pride. I still can't believe no politician has never attended that.
So a question obtains, and this is, you know, this is outside the scope of your campaign, but within the scope of, you know, Democratic Party politics, are you sitting here telling me that running on a platform like that, that Democrats just didn't show up in the general election to vote in favor of that in Congress?
Well, it's worse than that, Bob.
I mean, how were your numbers in the general election? How were your numbers compared to Hillary's?
I think I got 36% of the vote in a 23% base district, and I think she got 38 or 30. I'd have to go back and look. I can look at that quick. In fact, I will look at that. That'll be easy to find. Hillary got 41% statewide. Now there are sections of the state that are 100% Democratic. I got 36% in a 23% base district, and Hillary got 40.6% statewide. So about the same. But you know, you have to understand that the district that I ran in is one of the widest, most conservative districts in the United States.
And of course, they don't want things like affordable, universal health care. They don't want their kids to be able to go to college without incurring brutal debt. They don't want those sort of things.
Many people know how big the University of South Carolina football stadium is. It holds, you know, 90,000 people. In our district alone, you can more than fill that stadium with the amount of people who don't have health care. But, you know, we're past, you know, Republicans don't care. We know they don't care. But the problem is, Bob, that Democrats don't care either.
That's my point.
So here is a fact. I wish I would do anything for 5 minutes on Rachel Maddow and every show that is out there just to share this one point. The South Carolina House District member, I live in House District 75. It's a Republican.
Of course.
He was endorsed by 6 elected official Democrats before the election. This man is opposed to living wage, opposed to women's choice, opposed emphatically to the Democratic Party platform. He was endorsed by the South Carolina State Senator, who is a Democrat. He was endorsed by the adjoining South Carolina House member, Beth Bernstein, who is a Democrat. He was endorsed by the Democratic Party sheriff. He was endorsed by the county councilman and by a former official. I mean, Democrats, stop endorsing Republicans.
No, and see, that's one of those things that, I mean, that is not, you know, that's not necessarily a South Carolina thing. Here in West Virginia, we had labor organizations endorsing Republican incumbents in Congress. And I,
you know what you don't see? Here's what you don't see, Bob. You don't see Republicans
endorsing that. Democrats.
Right.
Yeah. How many Republicans endorsed Clyburn?
Thank you. Because they are organized.
Zero? Is it zero,
they,
Eric?
Yes, it is. No, it's less than zero. It's like -4. I promise you, it's -4.
Well, you know,
yes.
Steve.
Democrats don't stand with their own, and I don't know how a state party chair could fail to put more than. How could a party chair, a major party chair, South Carolina Democratic Party chair, how could you fail to put names on more than half of the ballots?
And keep your job?
And keep, not only that, but then and then all around you, Democrats are endorsing Republicans, and you think you're good enough to run the National Democratic Party. How is that? In what universe? In what universe do you exist where you think that that makes you capable of running the National Democratic Party? Thank you.
Yeah, no, I get it. Steve just wrote in, and he said, there's more money in losing than winning. Why else would people do this in South Carolina? I have a hard time believing in that level of hubris.
Really? I mean, exactly. And here's the thing. Guess what? Here's an interesting analogy, right? The Chicago Tribune did pretty well losing with the Cubs for about a century, didn't they?
Well, they did.
There was more profit in the lovable loser Cubs than there was in a competitive Chicago Cubs team. And there are people who have built careers in South Carolina around, you know, oh no, we're just a simple poor state and everybody around us loses. Careers are built out of that sentiment.
And again, not isolated, not limited to South Carolina.
Correct.
Let me depart then, and just share some of. I mean, okay, this is one of those things that I've got in my head, and it just won't go away. I want to start by saying that I don't have a problem acknowledging the Russian chicanery inside the electoral process. I don't have a problem acknowledging, you know, the Comey business. Or the fact that maybe we just had a chance to find out that there are a hell of a lot more, if not outright Klansmen and outright neo-Nazis, at least fellow travelers and sympathizers in this country. But all of that having been said, you know, you said it was August. I think it was probably about the same time. Hell, it may have been during the primaries. And it goes back further than that, with me saying Hillary Clinton, if the nominee, will lose.
Yep. I said the same thing, but...
right, but, you know, nobody listens. But here's what gives me the creeps. You just mentioned an entire class of professional losers. Well, right. One of those professional losers is now a guy by the name of Robbie Mook. And getting lost in all of this Russian chicanery and Comey and all of that stuff and the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen is the fact that she ran in 2008 and got beat by a black guy whose middle name was Hussein. And then she ran again this year and got her ass handed to her. Granted, she got more popular vote, but that ain't the system we've got.
Yeah, I mean, let's insert a footnote there. If anybody in Hillary Clinton's campaign cared about winning the popular vote, they should never be allowed back into politics again.
Okay, fair enough. So here's the thing that wakes me up at this, with the sweats at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm convinced. Now, I do not have empirically gathered data to support this, but I'm personally convinced that somewhere in Chappaqua, New York, Robbie Mook and others who made an awful lot of money off of this loser campaign are looking at Hillary Clinton and saying, babe, you got this. You're going to be younger in 2020 than Bernie was this year. You won't be too old to run again. Third time's the charm, right? I mean, after 4 years of Trump, they'll be clamoring for you. And that just makes me know that the shitstorm is going to continue to pour out of the shitty heavens for not 4 but 8 years.
Well,
and I've got this retread theory of politics. No, Joe Biden. Okay, maybe you're interested in running in 2020. Talk yourself out of it, Joe. And no Hillary part. and a general. You know, maybe we need to start printing buttons that say no retreads.
The most important word to concentrate in all of that is shitty. Oh no, a politician said the S word. Yeah, you're right. I did that. I did a radio interview on FEC Airwaves in Charlottesville a couple of weeks ago, and I said that, and he went, "Oh no!" And then he kept it in because I said, "You know what? What's worse, the fact that they use a synonym for feces, or the fact that Donald Trump is going to destroy civilization?" And so he kept the word in.
Yeah, which one of those is more obscene? Because that's the
right.
That's the standard. It's, you know, is the word obscene?
Right. What's worse? You know, all the variations of the word for poop, or what Donald Trump's about to do to the Constitution.
But it's the reason I mentioned my own personal hell there is that what you're telling me, Eric, confirms it. I mean, we've got a guy, a professional loser, running for DNC chair.
Well, here's my response, and it's an important one because, you know, I don't know how wide our audience is nationally. I hope we've got people out there who are plugged into DNC members, right? And I know you have access to West Virginia DNC. So here's where this matters. Jamie Harris and the South Carolina Democratic Party chair, they now realize doesn't stand a chance to win. He's got a loser record, and nobody's come behind him. And I mean, really, he's just utterly failed here in South Carolina. But that's why Tom Perez has jumped into the race, Bob. Tom Perez doesn't look like he's necessarily from Establishment Inc. Who was the South Carolina Democratic Party convention keynote speaker? It was Tom Perez. All right. He has entered the race late. Everybody thinks, oh, well, he looks nice and compared to Keith Ellison. Well, he's more balanced. No, he is the establishment. Do not be deceived by the fact that he was Secretary of Labor. Who did Labor endorse? AFL-CIO endorsed Keith Ellison. Don't be fooled into thinking that Tom Perez is the answer now. That is party establishment. They want to keep an establishment. They want to keep, I mean, listen, I don't like Budweiser. I like Bud Light even less. We do not want the Democratic Party to be Republican Light. Because guess what? That doesn't help people.
No, and they don't learn from their mistakes. I'm looking at a story from 4 days ago. Four governors endorsed Tom Perez. Virginia's Terry McAuliffe, Colorado's John Hickenlooper, right. Rhode Island's Gina Raimondo, and Louisiana's John Edwards Perez.
If Perez wins, you will have everything about the Democratic Party that you hated in the last X amount of years. We need to turn the party upside down on its head and get a little progressive. And by progressive, we just mean health care is a human right, living wage, and stop blowing everything up.
And maybe, you know, let women make their own, leave the decisions about the workings of their bodies to the women who have them.
And maybe make it a little safer for them to live.
Well, there's that.
This is just common sense.
Yeah, right. But the thing is, common sense is now left wing. Isn't it?
Yeah, funny how that happened. Because I'll tell you what, I guess otherwise we're supposed to think that the nation fell down on its knees, apologized to God, and Donald Trump was sent as a Messiah. I mean, my God, if I'd written that in a Pastor Pillow column, I would have sat back and laughed so hard. But here it is.
You never would have hit the publish button. But you know what Jerry Falwell Jr. is saying, right, Eric?
I've known many things he said. What's
Jerry Falwell Jr.
Oh Lord, brother Bob
has said that it was the announcement of the men that he would pick for the Supreme Court that pushed the evangelicals to support Donald Trump in numbers not seen by Romney or John McCain.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's the thing, though. On that list of potential Supreme Court justices, Eric, is a guy who posted his naked cheesecake picture on a gay hookup site.
Well, here, I thought you was going to say it was Jimmy Swaggart.
David Justice Pryor.
Justice Swaggart.
David Pryor of Talabama.
Well, maybe we enter the next stage of the conversation, Bob, with a little Jeremiah and a little lamentation. So here we
lamentate, all, brother, lamentate.
Let me lamentate the situation. Here we were with the... Really, civilization was at a crossroads in 2016. People were mad. Things weren't working out. We could have chosen a nominee that really would have helped people in the long run if he'd been able to pass policies. You know, we'd have had infrastructure, unemployment solved, living wage, health care is a human right. We were at a turning point. Then along came the billionaires and said, you know, post-Soviet Russia, that plutocracy is not working out so bad for the billionaires. And that was it. That was 2016. We the people versus plutocracy. But the voters are so stupid, Bob. Oh, and here I can hear. Oh, my God. A politician called the voters stupid. Except that they are.
The people have spoken, the bastards.
Well, I was at the South Carolina State Fair. I spoke to four consecutive young female voters in their early 20s who were so excited to vote for Hillary Clinton. And I did their pictures next to the Hillary cutout, and I said, "Hi, my name is Eric. I'm running for Congress." "Well, what's that?" "What do you mean?"
"Huh? What? Stop. Quit. No, you're lying now."
Four straight voters in a row. If I had a dollar... I can't even begin to tell you the level of general ignorance in the electorate when it comes to what a congressman is. There were people who thought I was Senator Tim Scott. There were people who thought that they didn't know what the difference between a congressman and a senator was. They didn't know how long the term of a congressman was.
Can I just interrupt long enough to say that the family resemblance between you and Tim Scott is minimal, nominal at best?
If you don't know the difference between me and Tim Scott, you clearly do not have access to Google Images. There were people who didn't know that they assumed that a state congressman was the U.S. congressman. I mean, there were every possible level of not understanding what Congress is I encountered on the trail. In fact, I even had a friend come to me after the campaign and say, "I went to vote for you, but you weren't on the ballot." And I said, "That's because you live 400 miles away, sweetie." There are districts. I said, "I'm not a senator." Yeah. At every possible level of ignorance I encountered. And the only way I've been able to deal with this, because it hurts. It hurts to have to my initial conversation with somebody to explain to them what a congressperson is, and they're in their 30s. That actually hurts my head. The only way I've been able to deal with that is remembering that there was a National Science Foundation poll maybe 2 years ago that found that one out of every four Americans still believes that the Earth does not revolve, that the sun revolves around the Earth.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it says so in the Bible.
Right, but they're just not familiar with the you know, the revolution. Oh, Copernicus, hello.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the revolution. You mean what happened in 1860?
No. I mean, I'm having with Copernicus.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, and so that's exactly, and that's where we're at. We're how can I, you know, on the campaign trail, and this is the Jeremiah part of our conversation. I maybe have 90 seconds to 2 minutes with your average voter. If I have to spend half of that conversation explaining to them what Congress is, it doesn't leave me a lot of time to explain the issues.
And you can't do that. You just have to tell them that you're gonna soak the fat boys and come out swinging.
Right. Well, but here was the average conversation I had with a conservative in our district. And this is the ultimate.
Wait a minute. You said you used to do improv.
Yeah, well, this is.
I'll be the conservative voter.
Well, we'll get ready to drop the big word, or at least call it the N word. Okay. So we'll role play. Hi. My name is Eric. I'm running for Congress. How are you today?
I'm sick and tired of these damn N words and their Black Lives Matter. That's how I am.
Oh my goodness, that's such a racist place to begin. Do you know who I'm running against? Do you know who Joe Wilson is?
Good God-fearing man who cares about the fetuses, is that's who.
Oh, no, but you remember the man who just said those most disgraceful words at the State of the Union, you know, years back. Remember that man?
Yeah, you mean when he called that Kenyan Muslim you slurper a liar? Because he is?
Oh, yes, that's exactly. Oh, no. See, that's the fact of the matter is what he shouted out you lie about was, in fact, the truth. President Obama was saying that that immigrants would not be able to have access to the Affordable Care Act if passed. And in fact, they don't.
Well, I mean, you obviously you support that Kenyan Muslim.
Well, yes, but see, sir, don't you care about your bridges and your roads and your education?
God will provide.
Well, but don't you think we have something to say about that?
I just know that the moral fiber of this country has been destroyed by the liberals.
If I told you that Joe Wilson voted against every federal infrastructure act that would have impacted our state for the past 15 years, would that change your mind?
Well, that's because he's a fiscal conservative. He's not going to waste money building roads for them people.
But you know that one-third of the structurally deficient bridges in our entire state are actually in our district, which only makes up one-seventh of the state.
See, so it can't be that many of them now, can it, Orange?
Well, but you remember that the historic flood, the 1,000-year flood that we just had, where half of our district was underwater and people were dying. Remember
and you know
that,
what?
Right?
We probably wouldn't have had that flood if it weren't for the Homer sectionals.
Oh, my goodness. You know, well, hi, my name is Eric. If you come to your senses, please vote for me on November 8th. Yay! You know, we didn't even practice that, and you pretty much nailed it, Bob.
Well, I mean,
although
they walk amongst us up here, too, or I walk amongst them. I'm outnumbered.
Kenyan Muslim was the nicest thing that I ever heard said about President Obama. The abject level of racism was so overt. The average conversation went, hey, I'm Eric. I'm running for Congress. I'm running against Joe Wilson. Well, Joe, he done spoke up against that N-word man in the White House. Now, that was the beginning of conversation.
In the district that houses the state university. Lovely.
USC, the Gamecocks, played Missouri. I stood outside of the stadium with my Bjorn campaign sign and my Wilson volleyball from Castaway.
Yeah.
Which I
Wilson!
Right. It was fun. I stood outside of that crowd after the USC won. You know, that's a happy football crowd. I can't tell you how many university students dropped the F-bomb at me. Because at that point, I was, you know, people knew who I was. And saying, F you, go Trump. And this was the, you know, these were the students.
Okay, so
this was the university crowd.
So let me.
And I had one student that night walk up to me and said, "Well, I voted for Trump. Maybe I shouldn't have," because he had voted absentee. He said, "Tell me why that was maybe a mistake."
Why can't you got no tattoo? Unscannable. No, I get that. So, where are you on this continuum, Eric, of poor, misunderstood white voters who just happen to vote for a guy who retweets Nazi memes?
That is the most adventurous question. I guess let me take the time to spell my name again for people who want to read about me. A-R-I-K, Eric Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. We just have to feel bad for the angry white man that felt left out. You know, something that seems to be a fact is that Labor voted against Hillary and voted for Trump, to the utter consternation of Labor. There was something about the pro-wrestling, snake-charming communication, you know, dynamo that was Donald Trump. He was able to brainwash people with relative ease. The simple-minded, the easiest, of course. I think it happened. People were angry, and they responded to the angry candidate.
Okay, I gotta talk to somebody who can help me with the people were angry part.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, now listen, they didn't make a choice that benefited themselves. They voted against their own self-interest. But human beings, listen, we're talking about
a good many people don't even
know what U.S. Congress is.
Yeah, but what happened for 8 years under Dim Leader and then 8 years under Obama that made them so goddamn angry? Because they were
the woman who stood up and said, "Get your federal government out of my Medicare." People just aren't that bright, Bob. And politicians aren't supposed to say that because that's a guaranteed ticket. You know, they can pull that quote out in the future. But guess what? Voters aren't informed. It's why we had a fake Democratic candidate in 2014 in my district. His last name was Black, so he won the primary against a real Democrat, but he's to the right of Donald Trump. Why did he win? Because voters didn't take 2 minutes to educate themselves before they walked into the booth. Voters don't make wise choices, and we're in this pickle because 23% of eligible voters voted for Donald Trump. They were brainwashed, they were angry, they weren't thinking straight. They didn't want a woman to be president. I mean, there are any number of reasons. They like John Wayne swagger. They think that they too could become a billionaire someday if they just act like him. I mean, you know.
Do you credit the fact that they felt like somehow or another they were put upon for their whiteness?
Yep. They saw we just saw tens of thousands of people protesting Star Wars because there weren't enough white people in it. The new Star Wars movies.
Yes.
So, yeah. Absolutely. Yes, they felt that their whiteness was being threatened.
And so to extend this then.
And thankfully their whiteness is being threatened. And we'll continue to be threatened.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a great hullabaloo at the University of Wisconsin right now, just slightly to the east of your growing up grounds.
But, I mean, you know, a century from now, my whiteness will not be as, you know.
There's a kerfuffle at the University of Wisconsin right now because they're going to, at this magnificent state university is going to offer a class called The Problem of Whiteness. And God Almighty, the pasty-faced and doughy contingent is out and up in arms.
That calls for more white mashed potatoes.
Sounds like to me. But you know, you've also got these people who,
I mean, they okay, now you said they aren't informed, but how do you go through a 2-year campaign season of Mexicans are rapists, grab them by the pussy?
I know.
And, that's my African-American over there.
Hey, by the way.
And put women in jail for reproductive procedures. And retweeting racist and Nazi and Klan memes. And so all these Trump voters, and we're going to be a while sorting this out. I've been told that they just didn't know that happened. That they were just going to vote Mike Merck right again. They didn't know they were getting under the sheets with the Klan.
Well, it's entirely possible, but Bob, it's why I'm utterly convinced Bernie would have won. Voters, you know, if we're talking about your stereotypical average voter, they have put no thought into the process. They just respond to the emotions that they've sensed over time. Bernie would have pulled far more people over when it comes to, you know, emotion and he would have demonstrably clobbered Trump in every single encounter. And he would have continued to do it from the stump. Trump stole the daily media for months from Hillary. But I think Bernie would have at least secured half of it. And really, when you're talking, I mean, my experience from 8 months of campaigning is the average person makes an emotional response. I'm an emotional communicator. I mean, I can sit down and write you a thesis on any one of these topics, but I prefer to tell stories. People responded to those stories. They responded to me as a communicator because I was earnest, honest, and if a throat needed to be bitten, I bit it. And I chewed it on stage if it needed to happen. You know, Hillary, by her own admission, she said it. I'm not a good politician. People want to come to a stage and hear a good story being told, or they want to hear a good message being communicated well. It's why I performed as well as the candidate who had $750,000.
Wait, you mean when the
three visits from Vice President Biden?
So are you saying that when the party's nominee is a person who speaks to half-empty high school gymnasiums and talks to them like this and continues and her voice keeps going up until she says the applause line? Are you saying that doesn't work?
Why it worked so well for Bill, who is an amazing communicator. I mean, and when you have in front of you two potential candidates and you recognize, or you should recognize because of what you do for a living, that this is a year of the populist, you work against the populist becoming elected as the nominee, you deserve to lose. You worked against the situation in front of you. That's why I said earlier, anybody on Hillary Clinton's campaign who worked to win the popular vote should never be allowed near politics again, because it's not about the popular vote. It's about the thing before you. And the thing before us was people like you and me back in September and August and July of 2015 said it's going to be a populist election. Make sure the populist candidate comes forward.
Well, I'm not as carved in stone as you are about what would have happened had Bernie been the nominee. I recall the fact that, and I've mentioned this on a number of occasions, one reporter has noted that the Oppo research notebook on Bernie Sanders in the RNC was 2 feet thick. They just never had to use it. But I don't know how the numbers break out because I haven't gone and looked at them. But, you know, Bernie won overwhelmingly in, say, Wisconsin in the Democratic primary. So did Trump. You compare apples to apples in that circumstance, I don't think you see Bernie winning.
Well, but how much did Trump win by against Hillary? 1%?
Well, yeah, 1%. Yeah, I know, and people get pissed off at me for saying this. Trump won over Hillary by a number that is smaller than the number of people who voted for Jill Stein.
I mean, that's just numbers. In my mind, a place like Wisconsin, you know, where I, you know, not far from where I grew up, I see Burning having won handily. But, you know, neither here nor there. It's going forward. The reality is that the orange tsunami is on the horizon and coming.
Well, and that's where I wanted to go with you, ultimately. What is coming?
Well, you know, I refuse allegiance to a Trump administration and to the plutocracy for which it stands. One narcissist under mammon, unconscionable with fascism and bigotry for all. I am firmly convinced that a tyrant is on the rise, something we've never seen in our republic. Not even close. There's a reason why both Bush presidents refused to stand behind Donald Trump. Think of that. As much as you and I cannot stand the presidency of George W. Bush and everything it represented, he himself refused to associate himself with Donald Trump. Donald Trump represents the end of the republic if given his way. The only thing that will keep him at bay are hundreds of thousands of people rising up and inserting themselves in resistance into the spokes of workaday life and the very institutions of the federal and state governments themselves working against him. This will be a test to the Union, to the Republic, the likes of which we have never seen, which I to my mind will be more than what we survived in the Civil War.
Well, because there's a survivability problem.
Right. Well, I mean, I think what Donald Trump wishes to establish is, in essence, what you see in the Russian Federation today, a plutocracy, a true plutocracy. I mean, remember, Vladimir Putin stepped down to not be president according to the Constitution for a term, right?
Right.
But we know who was in charge of the nation during that time.
Big Bad Vladdy Daddy.
Right. Even if Trump, you know, follows the letter of the law, which I don't know that he will, I think we can expect plutocracy as we currently see it in the Russian Federation if they get what they want. And that's a good case scenario. The man just called for an arms race. We just reduced from 23,000 nuclear warheads to 7,000, both nations. We actually finally made progress against blowing up the little blue planet that sustains us. And what's the first thing, you know, what are Donald Trump's first acts? Is to declare a new arms race. Are you kidding me? Cold War Part 2?
That's good for business.
It is good for business. It's great for the military-industrial complex. It's crap for civilization. But the people have spoken and chosen foolishly, as people are wont to do. I mean, your son is celebrating birthday 21, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mine just celebrated birthday 9. Do you remember all the wonderful decisions your son made at 9?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
you know, William Golding wrote The Lord of the Flies for a reason.
Well, that's absolutely true. But as far as, like I said, survivability, the fake news thing is also an interesting phenomenon.
Wow.
Because there was, I don't know if you caught this or not, Eric, but over the last few days, fake news almost got World War III started.
Mm-hmm.
It was December the 20th in a fake news publication called AWD News that said former Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon said, "We will destroy them with a nuclear attack," speaking of Pakistan, "if they sent troops into Syria." Which then got the Pakistanis kind of head up. And they said, "Well, you know, you're not the only nuclear kid on the block. We got some too."
Nuclear kid on the block.
And then the Israeli Minister of Defense got on Twitter Okay, because I guess we live in a post-press conference world. Yep. Got on Twitter and said the statement attributed to Yalon was never said. Reports referred to by the Pakistani defense minister are entirely false. Isn't it cute how it's the report referred to by Pakistan, not the language of that, instead of saying somebody out there published fake news.
Right.
So, you know, Christmas. A lot of people could have been glowing in the dark this past Christmas, which was yesterday.
You know, those lights last more than 100,000 hours.
That they do.
A lot more than LED.
Light-emitting diode with emphasis on the word die.
Well, and here I can present beyond being a congressional candidate, but also by being a librarian, right?
Right.
It would appear that the age of misinformation is upon us. I was talking to my friend in China the other day, and he reminded me that the age of misinformation started there a while ago. Try to hop on Google in China. Okay, it just happened here. Now, we have now experienced the age of misinformation. People who are willing to believe anything they see in print, who aren't willing to check a source whatsoever. Where did that start in the United States? I like to go back and say, hey, do you remember when the Wall Street Journal got rid of its library and its fact checkers? They were the first major newspaper in the country to do so. Guess what happened? Every newspaper got rid of its library and fact checkers. And every journalist was now on its own, on his or her own, to write stories without being able to submit them for review. So now I'm a journalist. I'm not going to submit a story that could get me in a lot of trouble if I don't have a fact-checking apparatus behind me. I have to do it on my own. That's not a very easy thing to do. I'm a librarian by training. I have actually been trained on how to critically review information to ascertain as to whether it's legitimate or not. That's my professional training.
Or even factual.
Right. I'm very good at that. And I love to get into debates with people about Wikipedia. Oh, Wikipedia is fake. I'm like, no, actually, Wikipedia, over the test of time, is better than Britannica. It's not perfect, by the way. It's got its own flaws, and I recently sent its director an email about its flaws. But, I have a particular training that helps me to understand whether something is true or not from a fact perspective. But we now live in an age where people don't care if it's true or not. They just saw it. And if it fits their own current worldview, they run with it. So we now live officially in an age of misinformation. We live in our own echo chambers. It's much harder now to break through to individuals to present a convincing argument contrary to their own worldview, which is a decided challenge in politics going forward, especially I live in a decidedly conservative state. If the first 90 seconds of a two-minute conversation I have with somebody is about the N-word in the White House, it doesn't leave me a lot of time to convince them that they should actually care about their education, their infrastructure, and their employment situation. But since they're only tuned into, racist garbage information through their social media and other technology devices, I mean, it's almost there's almost no way to break through now. It's one of the disadvantages of social media. People care just as much about Breitbart as they do CBS News. And it runs the same way through progressives and left of centers and Democrats, by the way. There is just as many fake news and clickbait progressive and Democrat sites as there are conservative ones.
So how do you teach people, you librarian, you? How do you teach people not to fall for this stuff? Is it rooted in confirmation bias?
you have to engage in actual multiple conversations over time. It's the same way, you know, Bob, you and I both came from, you know, fairly, you know, evangelical fundamentalist backgrounds, right?
Yep.
We in my experience, it took multiple conversations over years to bring me to the light, or to bring the light to me. And it's the same way. There is no easy way to accomplish the education of the average citizen. Again, 1 out of 4 citizens in the United States of America still thinks that the sun revolves around the earth. 1 out of 4. They also believe that the building of a gigantic ark in Kentucky or Cincinnati or wherever it is, modeled on Noah's real ark, is a good thing too.
Yeah, and it's the Noah's real it's the Noah's real ark part that just really right. gets me giggling.
The world is 6,000 years old, and you know, and that climate change is not real. I mean, and going on.
So wait. I mean, I think we're approaching Epiphany. I know it was a couple of days back, but yeah, no. We're fucked.
Yes, that's therein lies the rub, right? We had a choice before us. You know that moment in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Mm-hmm. Choose wisely. For as the real Grail, you know, brings life, the false Grail takes it from you. We had that choice. And now we realize it wasn't a choice for the next 4 years. It was a choice for the next 1,000 years. I don't know how we're going to undo what we have done. We have handed over the reins to the men and few women who don't care about any of us.
I mean,
I don't know if we're going to have a vote in 2018 or 2020.
I don't know if we're going to have life on Earth.
I walked off a plane at the age of 14 in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, days after Eric Duvalier had fled the country, baby doll. I watched a man being burned alive in a tire pile. I saw soldiers. I still can't believe it. I really don't think the adults that led us down there understood what we were walking into. They sent a bunch of ninth graders into a coup in Haiti. But I got to see the tail end of the coup. I watched a world burning around me, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It can happen that fast. It truly can. Until you've seen it for yourself, you don't understand it. But it can transform that quickly. And we just gave it over to the people that could make it happen. Not 51% of us, but 23% of us. But we were asleep at the wheel, and we got caught.
Well, you're a literary sort. Let me share a little something with you.
All right, well, listen while I have a little more mashed potatoes.
You're not going to have enough to make potato cakes if you keep this up. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah, I made, like, pounds and pounds of potatoes.
Oh, tease me.
I'm a Scandinavian. Come on now.
Taunt me. Go right ahead. You know, so I write poetry, and it's free form, and it doesn't rhyme. But I wrote this the other night. Are we ready for this? Were you ready for this when you stayed home, or when you didn't? When you muttered, but Benghazi! When you railed, but she gave speeches to Goldman Sachs, argle bargle warble whoosh! When you squealed, TPP, she only says she doesn't like TPP! When you fulminated, NAFTA took Merck and Jobs, as you donned your sweater knitted in a Bangladeshi hell shop that you got for $9.99 on sale at American Eagle? When you drank the wormwood, chased it with Kool-Aid, and bellowed, but, DNC, so loud people will hear you for 7 generations. Hear you and weep. Because we are not ready for this. The neo-Nazis are ready for this, but you're not a goddamn neo-Nazi. The Klansmen are ready for this, but you're no dirty-ass Kliegel.
The anti-Semites are ready for this, but you're no sick anti-Semite. You just hated her. That was all. Nothing personal. Tell Michael it was only politics. And ready or not, here they come, and there ain't no olly-olly. We are not ready for this. Little golf clap. Thank you, Eric.
You know, throughout the campaign, I began or ended most speeches with, in South Carolina in 2016, the barbarians aren't at the gate. They own the gate. And I am not going to sit around in a seersucker suit and sip sweet tea while civilization crumbles all around me. It's why I ran. Unfortunately, the man in the seersucker suit is real. He lives here in this state. And he owns the Democratic National Party across the country. The seersucker suit man who sits around and sips sweet tea is real. Meanwhile, people are suffering. Tonight, 300,000 of my poorest neighbors in South Carolina will go to bed without health care and wake up without it because my pending UN ambassador, blood on her hands, will not expand Medicaid. How can the pending ambassador of the United States to the United Nations be a governor who refuses to expand Medicaid and provide health care to a third of a million people suffering? At the click of a button, she could eliminate all of their suffering and won't. How can I live in a House district where six Democratic Party elected officials endorsed the Republican when 5 of 8 federal slots on the ballot in my state are empty? Yet the person who leads that state Democratic Party thinks that he's good enough to be the head of the National Democratic Party. What the hell is wrong with us? What the hell is wrong with the United States of America that it would elect a man as president who endorses grabbing the genitals of other women without their permission? And what the hell kind of union would force a woman to perform in front of that man on inauguration night? What the hell kind of religion, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, would say that our religious cantering choir shall perform the night that this cretin barbarian orange plague becomes president of the United States of America? Shame on any religion. Franklin Graham, to hell with you. Damn thee and thy whitewashed hypocrisy. For saying that God sent us Trump as a redemption. If God sent us Trump in any way, shape, or form, it was as a punishment. Which, of course, we know didn't happen. We don't need the devil in the universe. Human beings are devil enough. And you know, that's another interesting thing, Bob, throughout the campaign trail. And you know I've railed on conservative, evangelical, ultra-religious.
As have we both.
Right. That is. Guess what? It's just as bad as the Democratic Party. I was in the South Carolina Democratic Party state party convention. I walked up to one of the caucus tables, and one of the caucus leaders, and this isn't even the faith caucus, asked me what I thought the Holy Spirit had to say about the presidential candidate. I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, you're Christian, aren't you? How does the Spirit lead you for president?" I said, "That is absolutely inappropriate." She said, "What are you talking about?"
There shall be no test for holding of religious office.
Thank you. And I said, for all you know, the man sitting next to you at this table is an atheist, and you've just vastly insulted him. And you know what happened?
What?
The man said, "As it happens, I am an atheist. Thank you."
Beautiful.
And you know me, I'm a card-carrying Catholic.
That you are.
I was at events. If I had a dollar for every event where I heard the devil or demons invoked or intoned in reference to the campaign, I mean, I wouldn't have needed a dollar. I couldn't believe How many Democrats talked about Satan controlling Donald Trump? I'm like, folks, you want to know why there are no Hindus here today? You want to know why there are no Muslims or atheists or agnostics or people of any other faith other than Christians gathered at this event today? Or Jews, perhaps? Because you act like Christianity is the national religion of the Democratic Party. I'm telling you, when I write my book, when the book comes out, there will be a special section of the book devoted to this. Democrats who, you know, Christianity is the religion of the Democratic Party. About halfway through the campaign, you know, as a candidate, here we get into some real sensitive territory. You are expected to go to black churches every Sunday morning, Bob. You're running for office in South Carolina.
Because that's where the constituency is.
You better go to black churches. But, of course, they don't endorse the candidate. But because you've been invited by the pastor, you just wear your button. And people come up and they see, oh, a white guy at the church. I'm supposed to vote for this guy. And they go up and look at your button, see your name, and that's who they vote for. It's wrong. It happens, and it's wrong. And I stopped doing it because it's wrong. Instead, I started going to Hindu temples, to Sikh temples, to Unitarian churches, other, you know, international faith festivals, and introducing myself as a member of the community, because that's what the Democratic Party is supposed to be. Guess what?
It
isn't. Hindus and Indians are a pretty conservative group, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, Nikki Haley and Bobby Jindal are two Southern Indian ancestry governors, right? You want to know why Hindus aren't showing up in Democratic Party events?
Nobody's ever reached out to them?
Right. Same with Hispanic Latinos. I was, as far as anybody can tell, the first federal candidate to have all of his literature translated into Spanish. If there are 100,000 eligible Hispanic Latino voters here, why aren't we embracing them? I mean, I had five Spanish speaking.
Oh, well, see, I can answer that for you, Eric. Because, see, if we embraced them, that would mean we were practicing identity politics. And, of course, that's a bad thing now. Because it makes the poor little white people feel all uncomfortable, because nobody's praising them for their whiteness or reaching out to them for their whiteness. But see, there's a problem to that. I mean, I've been chastised for practicing identity politics. There's another word for identity politics, Eric. Would you care to guess at it?
Bob, no, I'll take door number two.
Civil rights.
Civil rights, Bob. Oh, Lord, you have invoked the presidency of President Johnson, and on heretofore, unto therefore, for all time, shall be the curse of thee.
But really, so we can't... but no, we're supposed... That's one of the things that pisses me off the most out of all of this, is that we're supposed to just sort of, I mean, I get what you're saying about it's wrong, because there are certain assumptions being made there that are wrong.
Well, but, I mean, I did.
But by the same token, we can't just say, well, you know, white folks are going to lead this. I mean,
somebody dropped out of our campaign because I refused to call the African Americans to the state house to protest after the Orlando massacre. I said, I am not Martin Luther King Jr. It's not my job here.
No.
You have to call everybody. I said, no, I don't.
But
people walked away from our campaign at that moment.
I mean, I'm still lost in so much of this. You know, how it was, and I kind of know, that NAFTA was an actual campaign issue in 2016 after it was passed when?
Oh, you know what's funny? I have reporters.
No, I mean, really, NAFTA was passed in the 1990s. 1990s NAFTA.
So I had a reporter call me and say, you know, Donald Trump has called NAFTA the worst thing that ever happened to the United States of America. What do you think? And I said, really? Well, I said, I think Donald Trump is the worst thing that ever happened in the history of the United States. Forget NAFTA.
But the point here is everything that NAFTA did, it pretty much did in the 90s and early aughts. Okay.
Well, trade agreements. Here's the problem with trade agreements, right? From the research that I did, we live in a global economy. There's no getting around that. I once had the premier of Queensland ask me when I managed this big science program for the state, why did China buy all the bauxite in Australia? And everybody around the table said, I don't know. And he said, well, neither do we, but they have a plan. And global trade is a way of going, hey, listen, some nations have a plan and we should come up with a plan. And it's great to come up with global trade plans. But when your trade plans only benefit the upper crust, that doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. But by the same token, Eric, all those people who were bemoaning NAFTA, they're not exactly taking magnifying glasses to Walmart to make sure that their goddamn socks weren't made in a sweatshop.
Right.
You know, again, that little poem I shared a minute ago about the $9.99 sweater at American Eagle on sale made in a Bangladeshi hell shop. That's real.
Right. Well, again, people are capitalizing on an angry sentiment without it. Listen, do you honestly expect the average individual to be able to look up NAFTA? I mean, seriously, it's not going to happen. So they will take the speaker at his or her word as being angry about something about people from somewhere else.
And precisely.
Nothing that works more successfully in politics than getting people to be angry about something from somewhere else.
The other.
Always the other. There is always the other. If you point the finger at the other and get loud, pitchforks will be raised. They will light the torches and they will go, yes, the other. Let us be angry at the other. Which is why Democrats won't embrace the Hispanic Latino community. Why half of the Democrats in my district won't embrace the LGBTQ community, because they are the other.
They're the problem, yes.
And how dare you go to a Sikh temple or a Hindu temple and try, or a Islamic, you know, or a mosque or an Islamic center and embrace the other? That's...
Well, that just means you're a terrorist yourself.
Or, you know, or an authentic Democrat. I learned so much, Bob. I'm so glad that I did what I did. Because you and I have had a relationship. How long have we... I mean, I've been coming on and off the show.
Couple of years.
3-4 years. Yeah. I mean, we're cut from the same cloth. You know, we had assumptions. You know, you and I, you know, having not run for office, you and I would have probably had the same basic assumptions. Well, I now know for a fact certain things. I know from running a congressional campaign, which is no easy task, but I can speak from experience now to all sorts of people. And I am hoping that people like you and, you know, 94.7 in Charlottesville and other progressive radio stations and organizations will take advantage of the experience I have learned. My fear is that that won't happen. I really hope people understand that it's important to listen to somebody who actually stepped inside the maze and ran the maze. I come out of the maze now. My assumptions are no longer assumptions. I now know certain things to be true. I know you don't have to have money to succeed in politics. Or, let us put it a different way. You could have all the money in the world and the vice president show up in your backyard time and time and time again and do just as well as an individual has very limited resources but a creative way to message. You giving me $700,000, I would have beat Joe Wilson. By the way, I cleaned his clock in the two debates.
I actually watched one of them, so yes, you did.
You know, another thing you do, surround yourself with experts. I had an advisory group that met weekly for 8 months. On that group were people from different backgrounds, experts in all sorts of areas, from political science to infrastructure to healthcare. And they advised me. I was never too ashamed to say I don't know about something. I had people, I had one person come up and say, tell me what you think about the Amateur Radio Parody Act. It wasn't just one, it was the amateur radio group in all of Aiken County. Like, this was important to them. And I said, I have no idea. But sit down and tell me why this matters to you. Let's talk about it. As a librarian, I was able to say, you know, I don't know that, but I'm completely capable of researching it. But tell me what it means to you, first of all. You know, I am probably the poorest congressional candidate in the history of the United States. I am by far a paycheck-to-paycheck individual. And I have watched the establishment Democrats crucify me post-election for having to work while I ran for office. I take care of a 70-year-old unwell mother and a 9-year-old girl, and I had to work. And if I hadn't run for office, there would have been no candidate on the ballot for a congressional district against, of all people, Joe Wilson.
And the Democratic Party of South Carolina was perfectly fine with that.
Was perfectly fine with it. Not just with that, but with
because,
the Senate.
Because
they were perfectly fine with the U.S. Senate ballot being empty, Bob.
Because that entrenched establishment is not that far from their Republican counterparts.
They would rather there be a Republican in office than a progressive. And Democrats across the state of South Carolina and the South need to recognize that. Your leaders would rather have a Republican in office than a progressive. Wake up tomorrow with those words in your mind. And by the way, give Bob $20.
That would be helpful. Steve from Georgia.
This radio broadcast is going to become increasingly important in the onslaught. You know, in the onslaught, rather.
Yeah, you almost said Anschluss. I heard that.
Going forward, radio broadcasts like yours, Bob, I mean, even just the podcast or the recording from tonight, it will matter. I greatly...
Well, I mean, I came to the conclusion on November the 9th that this has to be a space for resistance. And I've been unflinching in I started using a hashtag, no collaboration.
Yeah, well, my hashtag that I've been using is hashtag resist.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I'm watching the V miniseries.
But when I say no collaboration, I'm very serious. I mean, look.
Do not be an appeaser.
No, and call out those who do. I mean, bless her heart, Jackie Evancho is going to sing the national anthem at the inauguration, okay? That 16-year-old young woman has a sister who's trans.
Her history will remember that she did it. History will not remember who sang at any of the 40-some inaugurations that preceded her, but history will remember that she did this one.
I mean, how is that not a knife in her sister's back?
Correct. By the way, we were the first candidate, as far as we know, in South Carolina history to have a transgender meet and greet. In fact, the first person that I asked to be advisor in my campaign was the leading transgender activist in the state. And I made it clear that I don't care if I win or lose, as long as I have the transgender community by my side, I know I will have done the right thing. And what just got pre-filed for the upcoming South Carolina legislation session? Another bathroom bill.
Potties. They're still obsessed with the potty.
Right.
Exactly.
My Catholic priest, who's from Africa, I love that man to death, said, what the bleep is wrong with you people in bathrooms? I invite you all to get on a bus in Africa. Guess what happens when you have to go? When we stop in the middle of nowhere, people get off. Guess what? They all go to the bathroom together. Guess why? Because it's not a sexual act. It's voiding your
system.
It's
waste elimination. Meanwhile, however, I can inform you that Brian Fisher, the helmet-headed proud son of Stanford that broadcasts for the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan, has declared that single-stall bathrooms create special rights for trans people. So I guess we have to build two stalls in every restroom now. Whatever happened to small government? Got to build two stalls in every restroom now in case a Christian wants to watch.
I say we just build a trough, a urinal trough, across the where the former Mason-Dixon line used to stand. And all people of the United States are invited to void at the trough. At the trough where I first saw the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so, voiding, people. You know what? At the library the other day, a group of first graders came in for a program we had. Guess what? They all had to go potty. Guess what they all did?
Really?
They all went into the same bathroom together. Because guess what? When you're 5 and 6 year old, it doesn't matter. You just got to potty. It's just...
Jesus. I know.
Damn... Anyways, I invited the leading transgender activist in the state by my side because this just disgusts me. I'm so sick and tired. But guess what? If we don't stand with the transgender community now, and guess what, Bob? Good many Democrats don't.
No, they don't.
I went to the Aiken
and they're homophobic into the bargain too, especially in the South.
I went to the Aiken County Democratic Party NAACP Liberty Dinner, or their Freedom Banquet, right? Their speaker was Derek Johnson, who's the head of the Mississippi NAACP. He looked out across the room and said, I see many ministers in this room today. Give it up. LGBTQ rights matter. Stop interfering with them. Give it up. That was his cry. I mean, it was the one and only time on the entire campaign trail that I heard an African-American say, stop it, to all the black ministers. Embrace the LGBTQ community. Like I said, I was the first politician ever go to SC Black Pride, which has been around forever. They almost fell over when I walked into the room. I said, what's the big deal? You're the first one to ever come here. How could I be the first one? It's 2016. Where are all the black elected officials? Why aren't they supporting you? Because we're gay.
Jesus. Well, it may be 2016 in some places, Eric, but, you know.
Well, listen, and I'm not going away. When Democrats when Democrats endorse Republicans, I'm going to call them out. When Democrats won't stand with the LGBTQ community, I'm going to call them out. When Democrats don't do the right thing, when they run for national office and they have no business doing so, I'm going to call them out. They might not like me, but here I am, and I'm not going anywhere until you take me off this blessed earth.
Well, that's how it has to be. And conversely, those constituencies have got to get loud and proud. Because
Go ahead.
Well, they're not going to get anything out of the Republican Party. And so the only hope is to transform the Democratic Party.
When you have a vanilla candidate, that's never going to happen. When you get somebody excited like me, who doesn't do this for a living, who doesn't make money off of doing this, who doesn't owe anybody anywhere anything, you can finally get up and speak for the truth.
There you go. Exactly.
I owe nobody anything.
So what are you doing, Eric, what are you doing on January 20th?
Eating mashed potatoes.
Same batch too, probably.
You know, Bill or Bob. I've written a couple of books, 4 books or 5 books, whatever. Again, Eric, ARIKBJORN. You can buy my books at Amazon.com. I'm writing a book right now called "So I Ran for Congress." I'm about 2/3 to halfway done with the book. Books take a long time to write. People want me out there right now, you know, on every street corner and at every rally, but there aren't many people, you know, writing books is kind of a rarity.
And it's a lonely business.
And not everybody can do it, and it takes a while.
Nah, it's easy. All you have to do is open a vein and bleed out of court.
Yes, several times. But you know, people who want me to get out there and do stuff right away, well, I have a word footprint to leave for the ages. So I'm writing a book. I don't expect to make money on it. You know, people have accused me of that. I've actually already declared I'm going to give the book away for free. It'll be free on Kindle, and I'll sell it as a hard copy at cost. I don't need to make money at this because what I have to say, to my mind, is more important than me making any money at it. I don't think of civilization as a four-year plan or as an eight-year plan. I think of it as a 300 or 400-year plan. In fact, I think we just took almost a millennium step backwards or could be on the verge of that. And I know that my experience is important to note for the future. The Democratic Party doesn't get it right a good bit of the time. And they don't get it right because they don't listen to people and because they're so controlled by the millions and billions of dollars that come about every election cycle. Well, I'm free of all of that. I'm not tied to any particular corporate structure or political structure or any other kind of structure monetarily. I'm myself, and I just ran for Congress. Not only me, we have a page on Facebook called the SC Blue Brothers. There are over four of us progressives, the Senate candidate and three congressional candidates. We stand together, one, united, of single mind, pretty much the same on almost every policy position you can think of. Our experience with the Democratic Party was the same across the board. The Democratic Party fails the people because they don't actually stand for the people. Now, their platform stands for the people, but they're not standing for the people. The Green Party, by the way, stands for the people. Labor stands for the people. And unfortunately, we've seen the Democratic Party and labor drift far and far apart.
Well, the drift there is not a one. It's not a one to one. The labor leaders who get driven to work in chauffeured limousines are firmly entrenched inside the Democratic Party leadership. It's the rank and file.
They are and they aren't, because
how many times did we see rank and file wanting Bernie only to be rebuffed by the leadership?
But also, maybe it's a bit more complex than that, because you also have a good many of the established Democrats that would never even say labor in a speech if you paid them to.
That's true. Because
because living wage scares the living daylights on a corporate.
Well, it's contrary to the model.
Right. So, I mean, you know what's neat though about being a labor? I mean, I live in South Carolina, which is the lowest union membership of any state in the country. That said, you can fill our big college stadium with more union members. I mean, there are a lot of union members here, but people just think there aren't that many. But it is not a very labor strong state. What I like to do when I was talking to people about labor, I would look out into an audience and I would say, "Who's your favorite football player? Who's your favorite baseball player? Your favorite basketball player?" They'd say, "LeBron James, Cam Newton." I said, "You know what? Those are two of the happiest union members alive." They'd go, "Huh?" I'd say, "Who's your favorite movie star? Harrison Ford." "Another happy union member." "What are you talking about?" "I'm talking about the fact that these are union folks."
And folks, you know, hey, if you ever do it again, you know another very happy union member? Rush Limbaugh.
There you go.
Bill O'Reilly.
Right.
Sean Hannity.
Right. Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Megyn Kelly.
That's great. And then here's the thing. People are obsessed with movie star and athlete salaries. I mean, people actually, there are careers built on discussion groups about salaries for athletes and movie stars, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are union members. These are happy union members. Why should they have all that's great about unions and the rest of us not? And when I tell that to a crowd, they go, "Oh, I get it." I'm like, "Yeah, because your living wage is the same thing. We just want the people who are making all the money to share some of it with the folks who need it to live. Why should only Hollywood stars and athletes benefit from unions? why not the average person? And then they suddenly get it, like a light goes off. And so I spent the whole campaign not only telling that to average voters. I mean, I spoke to union groups many times. I said, stop speaking in acronyms. Nobody cares that you're the IAAAWXZ. That doesn't mean anything to them. Tell them what you do. You're a painter.
Yeah.
You're a technician. You're an aerospace engineer. And there's a union and a guild for that. Don't speak in acronyms and start telling people, hey, do the athlete thing to them. Then they'll get it. Speak to them about unions in ways that make sense. And it's like, oh, I'm like, yeah, communicate effectively and your message comes through. Find a way to present your message in a way that people get it. And you will connect with your voter in the 90 seconds that you have. But, you know, the great orange terror is out there, Bob. I don't know. I really don't know.
And I don't either. I guess the big news is that, the Beach Boys will now perform? And I kind of looked at that at the inauguration. I kind of looked at that they performed for Nancy.
Are there any left?
They performed for Nancy Reagan because she was afraid those other acts would bring the drug people. You know.
Lying in bed like Brian Wilson did. Is he even alive? Is Brian Wilson still alive?
I got no idea.
I have a feeling that the Beach Boys are a little bit no longer alive. That we're going to see a whole...
Boys, you know they mean? Ain't.
Right. I think we're going to see a lot of replacement members.
The stuff like... I don't know if you caught this.
It would be like saying the Beatles were going to perform. Minus George Harrison and John Lennon and Paul couldn't make it either. But Ringo will be on drums.
Well, we can't take Dennis when we go for a swim because he's going to get drunk and he's going to fall in. He's going to drown. He's going to drown. No, sorry.
No. Listen, I mean, the interviews that I do post campaign have to be preserved and, you know, put in a vault for not just the, you know, 2018 and beyond, but I mean, for the like long-term future. An important thing just happened. 2016 just happened. It was real. It will impact us for decades, centuries.
And we're shoving it out the door for all we're worth. And 2017 promises no better, Eric.
And if people who are listening can, please give money to Bob's cause, because otherwise you wouldn't be hearing what I have to say.
Well, that's important, too. Yes.
This is how but this is how this works. You know, and I'm also not supposed to say this. Guess what? People didn't contribute to me.
No.
People just thought, oh, all I have to do is give their vote. I mean, I got $70,000, and there's a list of, you know, so many hundred folks who donated, and I'm, exceptionally grateful that they did, and some people gave a lot. But the vast majority of people who voted for me didn't give a dollar. The DNC didn't give a dollar. The DCCC didn't give a dollar. Democratic Party establishment didn't give a dollar. Most elected officials wouldn't be seen with me and wouldn't help me gain a dollar. Where does this end? You know, I'll do it. I'll run for office every election cycle for as long as I live, and I don't need to raise a dollar. I'm pretty creative. I will find ways to get people to vote for me. I'll be disruptive. I'll get my message out there. But folks, if you're listening to this and you actually care about something on the ballot, don't just think your vote is all that matters. You have to give time. You have to give dollar bills. You have to convince others to do the same. Going forward, you know, once we really reached our when we really got our ground game going, Bob, we didn't have any paid staff. It's when we had no more paid staff that we were really effective. It was people giving because they believed in the cause. Jesse Ventura, who, you know, a very controversial political figure, but the one thing I greatly respect about him is that he said, if I was going to run for a second term, I won't raise $1 and I won't ask for $1. You can either elect me because I did a good job or didn't. And that's the kind of system we need that respects and that allows a candidate to present their issue in an equal manner as another candidate without having to completely cater to the economic system that exists around election cycles. I guess we call that campaign finance reform.
I think we do.
I mean, we need it. We need it bad. We need it really bad. But look what just happened. The South Carolina Congressional District 5 candidate earned $750,000 or thereabouts and had 3 visits from the vice president and did just the same as me in an even harder district who only raised $70,000 and had nobody stand with him. How did I do it? I'm not going to answer that question. The Democratic National Convention, the committee, the DCCC, and anybody in Democratic Party politics needs to come up to me and ask me. I am not going to tell people how well I succeeded. They wouldn't support me then, and I'm not going to tell them the trick of how to do it without them coming up to me and asking me. So they can lose every race, local, national, statewide, forever and a day. I hold certain keys to certain secrets, and I'm not going to give them away.
Not even in the book?
No. I mean, wait to see what I want to run for in 2018.
I'm kind of looking forward to finding that out.
I know how to attract attention and to communicate a vital message. And guess what? Democrats just proved that they don't know how to do that. But they are willing to throw lightning bolts at the same spot on Earth. Again. And it won't work. That's the fear. You know, the DNC, Tom Perez, Jamie Harrison, you name it. Anything less than Keith Ellison won't be what it needs. They already reelected Nancy Pelosi, and that was a horrendous decision.
Well, Chuck Schumer in New York, I mean, please.
Yeah, exactly. They aren't changing course. So guess what happens in 2018 and 2020?
They live in the wilderness some more.
Right.
But life is good for them because the check clears, Eric.
Well, yeah, if you're in the wilderness and the water flows from the rock, you're fine. But for the most of us, no, it ain't good.
Ain't good at all. Well, Eric, this has been a delightful conversation, and it's been a while since we had one. I have a feeling we'll be talking more as the Trumpocalypse rolls along. I have one thing to tell you. I've spent a lot of time, because, you know, I'm a practitioner of the art of word knowing, and I can't see myself using that man's last name and the word president in front of it for the next 4 years. It'll just gall and gag me.
I won't, and I have it, and I will never.
You know, people have pointed out. People have pointed out that POTUS, POTUS, can also be translated as piece of totally useless shit.
No, I will never put those two words together, ever.
But I got to thinking. And it kind of dawned on me, I think, Friday. And I've been pondering it over the weekend. I think I know who he really is. That's not that guy with that name up there, with the tweeting and the orange face and the orange hair and all of that. I know who that is.
Enlighten.
Sandy Kaufman. Think about it. There's about a 4-year age difference between the two.
The man in the moon.
There's about a 4-year age difference between the two. At one point in time, Andy Kaufman approached Vince McMahon Sr. about taking his act into the WWE.
Oh, my goodness. That was the funniest thing.
Then Andy Kaufman died.
Or did he?
And a few short years later, that guy shows up hitting people with chairs in wrestling matches.
Careful now, Bob. NSA is listening.
That's why do you think I'm putting the information out there? This is dangerous stuff.
Where does that put Jim Carrey?
What do you mean?
He played Andy Kaufman, but maybe he didn't.
Well, no, he played him, and he played him according, you know, to the script. Don't you remember when he was having the psychic surgery in the Philippines and he winked?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Listen, Bob, it's the age of misinformation. I think you just want to.
And I think the real guy with that name probably died a couple of decades back in a tragic toupee fitting accident.
Oh my God.
He smothered.
Somebody, Sparky, get Bob a merit badge, quick.
So for the next 4 years, when I must refer to him, I'm probably going to refer to him as President Kaufman.
There will be four of us laughing very hard every time you do. Oh my. Bob, I think that made my night.
I hope it helped. Because this guy coming in as president is a violation of, I mean, we're talking about violating laws of nature.
I mean,
gravity,
any moment,
the gas laws.
I'm expecting the police box to show up and Doctor Who to just whisk him away. I mean, really, honest to God, this man is almost enough to make you believe in Revelation. But not quite.
Well, I mean, there's the whole wound in the head thing. We thought we had that pegged when George Bush got drunk and fell off his rolled off his couch into the coffee table.
But you know, maybe here's my closing statement. It was a comment I made in my writer page the other day. Again, Eric, A-R-I-K, Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. There is no Antichrist, but there are many Antichrists. And Donald Trump is one of them.
Right, because there are passages where it's plural, with a little A.
No, I mean, and Paul, the Apostle Paul wrote about Antichrists.
Yes.
People who act antithetical to the message and mission of Jesus Christ. I mean, and
of course that becomes a pretty broad category. I mean, that takes in Franklin Graham,
Jerry Falwell
Jr.,
Jimmy Swaggart, the Bakers, you know,
the porpoise driven life guy,
Rick Warren,
Joel Osteen,
T.D. Jakes, yeah, all of them. You got it. Bunch of antichrists out there. Oh, Lord, we just lost half of our Democrats. That's the problem, folks. These preachers aren't authentic. The message isn't authentic. Your politician's message isn't authentic. If your politicians and your preachers aren't talking about making people's lives better, no matter where they come from or who they are, they're full of BS. I should make that a campaign slogan.
I don't know. Will it fit on a bumper sticker?
No, but maybe a meme.
Viral memes are where it's at, right? Well, listen, Eric, I hate that I've taken you away from your mashed potatoes for 2 hours.
No, I ate them the whole time.
Oh, well, rub it in then, why don't you?
I did.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want pictures. But I think going forward, we'll need you to check in periodically, just with whatever outrage du jour has grabbed you.
Absolutely.
Because it does. You know, you see things I don't, and vice versa. And we need to be poised and prepared to resist. We need to be poised and prepared to call out the collaborators and make sure that their names are known and that it is not forgotten. And we need to guard against those evangelicals you've been talking about, because as was pointed out by VT Blom in the chat room, some of these damn fundies voted for him because they expect him to bring on the end times.
Lord Almighty.
One of Jim Baker's guests a couple of weeks ago said that he's either the Messiah or, more likely, the guy declared, John the Baptist.
Or. It's the or part. It's the or that gets me, Bob. It's the or.
Well, we will be damned by our conjunctions.
Oh, Lord. And our misplaced prepositions. How can you be or? I mean, how can you stake your...
Go over to rightwingwatch.org. You can find it. I will leave you to that. I'm not going to play it again, but it's there. He's either the Second Coming or John the Baptist.
Speaking of
I would think the headless part would be the dead giveaway on John the Baptist, but I'm funny that way.
I shall have myself a second helping or coming of mashed potatoes on that note.
I'm telling you, if you don't fry some of those up into potato cakes, there's something wrong with you.
I shall mail one to the Bob Kincaid radio warehouse as soon as possible.
Get right on it. Eric Bjorn, take care.
Thank you, Bob. A-R-I-K-B-J-O-R-N. Find me on Facebook or on Amazon. Read a couple of my books. And please, 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 please give some holiday gift certificate money to Bob Kincaid and his radio industry.
Thank you very kindly, Eric. You have yourself a wonderful evening.
Peace.
Enjoy them spuds.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. The one and only Eric Bjorn, A-R-I-K-B-J-O-R-N. You can indeed find him on Facebook, and you will enjoy him. For he's probably more intelligent than at least 5 out of 6 members of the South Carolina congressional delegation, not to mention 2 senators. Just saying. So I should probably give an update on fundraising, being as how it's 18 minutes past the hour, past the third hour of the program. I wanted to thank Jenny. Jenny up in Wisconsin. Jenny kicked in $63, 3 times 21, because today is Ferg's 21st birthday. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you very much. And then Steve from Georgistan and Ms. Karen and little Cletus. Cletus is a good girl. Kicked in another $20 to make it $83. So that means, you know, we got $117 to raise for the evening, and that's not terrible. Hopefully we can manage that between now and 9 p.m. That being the case, of course, if you want to help out, head on radionetwork.com and contribute and the form filling. And if you prefer the United States mail, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. I say that entirely too quickly, but if you couldn't get it all, send me an email and I'll help you out. So let's see here. Where to go on this Moran Monday? Because we got plenty of Morans. We're not hurting for Morans even a little bit. That having been said, a couple of notes. Terrace pointed out during my conversation, religion is the original fake news. The good fake news. Right, exactly. And Rob up in Minneapolis said, religion happening to the United States hasn't helped much. Trump is the cherry on the top, or maybe the 800-pound gorilla. Or poop. I mean, there's all kinds of metaphorical possibilities out there. No, I can't help it. Even when I'm trying to take a little time off, I still see stuff. And I still read stories. Remember last week the story of the neo-Nazi Andrew Anglin, who doxed a bunch of people in Whitefish, Montana for being Jewish? Remember that? Yeah? Police there had to ramp up patrols, that sort of thing. Well, now that he's had some success, Andrew Anglin has called on his fellow travelers, his fellow goose steppers, to descend upon Whitefish, Montana. And Andrew Anglin made an announcement. He runs that filthy little cesspool called the Daily Stormer. He says, we are planning an armed protest in Whitefish. Montana has extremely liberal open carry laws, so my lawyer is telling me we can easily march through the center of the town carrying high-powered rifles. I myself am planning on being there to lead the protest, which has been dubbed March on Whitefish. Currently, my guy says we are going to be able to put together about 200 people to participate in the march, which will be against Jews, Jewish businesses, and everyone who supports either. We have to stand up to these people, and we have to force an apology. This will be an absolutely massive victory for our cause. We've never done this before. Yeah. So they are emboldened, I guess we could say. Emboldened indeed. They're also angry. It turned out that Benito Cheeto issued a Hanukkah tweet. And in that Hanukkah tweet, he said, Happy Hanukkah. This, of course, pissed off his goose-stepping followers to no end. One tweet responding to it, to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's tweet. You better be fucking kidding me. I voted for you, and you said you were a good Christians, and we don't support satanic Jews. That came from someone by the name of Frank Salazar. Then someone else under the Twitter handle Shoa Nuff Rises, S-H-O-A-H, Nuff Rises, at Real Donald Trump, stop supporting Israel, President Trump. They are pushing white genocide. Do not assist them in wiping out our race. Citing to a photograph of something that purports to be August 25th, 1998, New York, New York. Gentlemen, welcome to the second centennial meeting of the Learned Elders of Zion. No, really. What the fuck? I hate Trump now. You know, I mean, I guess these numbnuts never quite got around to noting that his son-in-law is Jewish. Oopsie, right? Thank you very kindly, Charlene. Thank you very much indeed. We are now in two-digit territory for fundraising this evening. That's excellent. We now have $87 to go in fundraising. So that's wonderful. Oh, that's funny. Will in Chicago says, if I was in Montana, I would be tempted to bring a huge boombox to play Spike Jonze's The Fuhrer's Face. Meanwhile, an update to a story from last week. Remember we talked about how A&E was going to air one of their reality documentary whatevers about the Klan? Oops. Every now and then they, you know, like a blind hog finding an acorn, every now and then A&E gets something right. And they canceled the program when they found out the Klansmen were being paid by the producers for access to their life ways. So the program is now over. There was a pretty significant shitstorm starting as it was anyway. But yeah, it's over, and that's a good thing. As far as resisting and not collaborating, well, let's give credit where credit's due. And that credit is due Maxine Waters. She said she will fight Donald Trump every inch of the way. And she said if he were to ask to meet her to meet with him, she would refuse to go. She was asked by the interviewer on MSNBC, Jacob Soboroff, if Democrats are being way too nice to him. And she said, I'll tell you, that has been a problem in my party, that when we're in power, we're nice. We bend over backwards to work with people. Trump has stepped over everybody. He has no respect for his own colleagues, let alone those on the opposite side of the aisle. He's called names. He's lied. Everything to show that he doesn't have good values and he can't be trusted. Why should we work with someone we can't trust? He'll tell you one thing today and another tomorrow. As a matter of fact, those people who voted for him ought to be really concerned about the fact that he's already backpedaled on so many of the promises he made. And so I have no intention of pretending everything's all right and that we're going to work together. As a ranking member of the Financial Services Committee, where he said he's going to bring down Dodd-Frank and he's going to get rid of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, I'm going to fight him every inch of the way. Are you saying, Soboroff asked, are you saying then that you would not sit down with President-elect Trump if he invited you to the White House to meet on common ground? Oh, no, I won't go. I'm not going to sit down with him. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to pretend. I'm not pretending. Why should I trust him? Why indeed? Let's check in with Scott and Punky. What's happening, Scott?
Hello, Bob.
How are you? Hi,
I'm
Punky.
I'm pretty good. Punky's pretty good, too. Punky is very noisy today, but hopefully, since darkness has descended, he'll calm down just a wee bit. I hope.
Well, you know, he's got things to say, too.
Well, he does, but must he be so shrill?
Are we back to that tone business again?
If I wanted shrill, I would have stayed married to the second wife. The first wife was okay, but I just didn't get it fully at the time. But that'll all be in my book. Anyway, I imagine the goose-stepping contingent up there in Whitefish are scratching their collective Nazi-helmeted heads over the notion that with the UN vote the other day about settlements in occupied territory in the Holy Land, that Trump's second puppet master, probably the bigger of the two, one being Putin, the other being Bibi Netanyahu, apparently is not having...
Oh, Bibi is having Excedrin headache number 9612.
Oh, it's enough to make you say, oi, you know? But they must be scratching their heads, because if Trump has a fan in Bibi, given their take on the chosen people, they're in a quandary, wouldn't you think?
I would. I would think that.
So we'll see how they...
Bibi, let's just clear this up for people in case they don't know the background. There was a resolution passed through the UN condemning the settlements in Israel, you know, where the Israeli government is continuing to dispossess Palestinians and put Israeli settlers on top of them, or, you know, on the ground where they were. And so the Obama administration, in a show of real courage of convictions, abstained from the vote, while the other nations voted in favor of the resolution condemning Israel for the settlements. This caused Bibi Netanyahu to fly into a rage, in which he called any number of Christian ambassadors to Israel to goddamn well meet with him on Christmas Day. Nice guy, huh?
Well, yeah, and...
And then he went off on Barack Obama and said that I'm sure this was orchestrated by the Americans. We abstained. It's not like we voted for it. But what we were supposed to do was be his little personal poodle and veto it.
Yeah.
You're right. That must make the white supremacists a little bit nuts.
Well, and it serves to verify something that I was saying, I guess, from the day after the election onward, and that is there, you know, and it may happen in waves, it may happen in stages, but there are going to be a fair number of people for whom, during the run-up to the election, Trump could do no wrong, who are going to find out that he actually has feet of clay, so to speak, that he is, in fact, there's very little difference in how he's showing up for us than any other bought and paid for politician. Am I close?
Yeah. I mean, you're certainly close enough for hand grenades and horseshoes.
Will I be awarded an ersatz rubberized cheroot?
Absolutely, or a rubber chicken that you may sacrifice to the goddess of irony at midnight.
Or choke it, which...
Now, don't anyway. Start.
I'm sorry, I...
Talking like that in front of a cockatiel, you should be ashamed.
Well, the bird has a male anatomic term in his name. What do you want?
Oh, well, you know? Do we have to call attention to it? What about the children?
Yes, what about... God bless the little children... But it's going to be highly entertaining, if nothing else, these next couple of years, when the mental midgets, when the less well informed or the greatly ill informed, find out that their Anglo-Saxon upright Protestant God Donald Trump is not as good as they thought he was. You know, when reality sets in other words, it'll just be interesting as hell to watch.
Well, I hope that since we have moved, I mean, this is absurdism, pure and simple. And I hope that there will be some members of the for-profit media who will ask tough questions. For instance, we have never had, Scott, a person in the Oval Office who could finally, once and for all, answer the question for us, is wrestling fake?
Well, he would be the one to settle that.
I mean, you
one.
Could say, sir, there's video out there of you beating on people with folding metal chairs. Was that staged, or are you really that unstable? I mean, that's actually kind of a fair question, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, but you see, you're one step ahead of the process here. First, he's got to hold a fucking press conference in order for, you know, to provide the forum in which the questions will be raised, hopefully. I'm we have the nightly Hitler pool, okay? So I'm wondering...
And saying Hitler pool does not count, okay?
Oh, I know. That's why I phrased it just that way. But, you know, we're going to have a little wading pool off to the side where first we're going to drown Punky because he's too goddamn noisy. But second of all, you know, we'll see how long it is. We'll place our bets to find out how long it is before Trump has his first bona fide press conference, you know, that hopefully will not contain hand-picked, you know, media stooges, because that's not the real deal. It's bad enough the real deal being the way that it is, okay, without him adding another layer of bought and paid for to the proceedings. So we'll be waiting for a lot of things. We'll have a lot of betting pools. The release.
Well, I mean, I think the is wrestling real. I think that's got real potential because he's got a wrestling magnate's wife in his team.
Yeah, or a tag team, as it were.
Linda McMahon.
Yeah, but even before that, he's seen it from the inside. He obviously read the script. You know.
But exactly.
The folding chair thing made me, you know, everybody seemed to enjoy my Haystack Calhoun story a couple of weeks ago. The folding chair reference made me think back to, oh God, the mid-60s, early to mid-60s in D.C. when the local independent TV station would show live wrestling from one of the Coliseums or Bridgeport, Connecticut, some weeks it would be. Emanating forth from whatever. But one night, the ring announcer, the commentator, Ray Morgan was his name, was interviewing one of the wrestlers at ringside between matches. And a fan, apparently buying into the idea that it was all real, actually took a metal folding chair, probably that he was sitting on, and whacked the wrestler right straight in the skull. Now, that might have been part of the script, but it sure as hell looked real to me as a kid sitting cross-legged 6 inches away from the TV the night that it happened. It was quite an impressive display, but I don't know.
We got a lot of fun in front of us. You just reminded me of something, though.
Okay.
With a word you used. It was just a typical ordinary day around the Tater household. And precious little Sweet Tater came through the door and announced to her Mommy Idaho Tater and her Daddy Irish Tater, "Mommy, Daddy, I've fallen in love." "Oh, really?" says Mama. "And who is he?" says Daddy. "Well, we just met, and we're perfect for each other. He gets me. He understands. He knows everything. It's like we're on the same wavelength." Well, who is he?" "It's Shepherd Smith." to which Daddy replies, "Well, you can't marry him. He's a commentator."
Okay.
That wasn't even a full ding. That's just like a half clapper cowbell. I'm trying. Todd in South Carolina takes one on the chin for us routinely. And this being more in Monday, I got to share this with you. He may have even seen this happen. Tom Jelton. You may have heard him on National Petroleum Radio. They invited Tom Jelton on to C-SPAN. Yeah, it's their part of their Show America a Real Journalist. And so he showed up on C-SPAN and he took listener calls. It was a beautiful thing, kind of, really. Because there's nothing quite like when the Hannity and Limbaugh listeners actually managed to write down the phone number for C-SPAN. You're gonna love this exchange, Scott. Remember, real journalist versus knuckle walker.
Mothers have migrated from Norway, and we really take pride in the migration and the family history. And so I just think that's something people need to remember. You know, it's something you talk around the holiday tables, and the young generation, the upcoming generations, get to learn stories that are passed on, you know, as a lot of civilizations and cultures do. But I would like to ask the guest what his opinion of the migration that is coming from Puerto Rico right now due to their financial chaos. 1,000 Puerto Ricans a week, not considered immigrants, but coming to the United States as U.S. citizens with no vetting, and that just seems something that's not being discussed at all.
Well, the reason it's not being discussed, and you've alluded to it, it's because they're not immigrants. Puerto Rico is, it's not a state, but Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, and just as, you know, we saw a similar situation during the Depression when was called the Dust Bowl in the South, were migrating to other parts of the United States, California, for example, where there were more employment opportunities. You saw the same thing with African-Americans migrating to the cities from the South. You know, we're talking here not about immigration. We're talking about migration from one part of the country to another part of the country because there's different economic opportunities. And you're right. Puerto Rico is going through a terrible financial system right now. But those people have every right to move to some other state, some other part of the country where there are more jobs. I don't, you know, you talk about vetting. We don't vet people that move, you know, from one state to another, or from one part of America to another. That's their right as Americans to move. So I don't see how we can really institute some kind of special policy for people from Puerto Rico who want to move to some part of the United States to find work.
Now, I got a question, Scott.
Okay.
Do you think dude called in on the Republican line or the Democrat line?
Well, if I had to guess, I would say the Democrat line, simply because there's so much, is it spillover? What would it be? The fact that the line has become blurred, at least with this last election, not only has become blurred, it's disappeared in a lot of regions that used to be predictably Democrat.
But, you know, Eric was talking a little bit ago about the electorate being Atne Ute Aitbre, if you own a what I mean may. Isn't that just a delightfully stunning example? He's worried about all them unvetted Puerto Ricans.
Yeah. Well, it's typical. That kind of thing is to be expected, okay? If they were foolish enough to buy into to Trump's continual line of bullshit, you know, they already have shown themselves to be, if not true believers, at least gullible enough to be taken in by what right-wing radio and TV has been dishing out, lo, these many, many moons, okay? So, yeah, it is disappointing, but it's not at all surprising. And as far as the Puerto Ricans are concerned, I know that you don't have cable currently, but did you have access to HBO in 2009?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get a copy of this to you one way or another. It's one of the best documentaries I ever saw. It dates back to 2009. It was on HBO. And was called Schmata, Rags to Riches to Rags. And it's the story, the sad but true story, of the garment industry in this country, specifically in New York, where it once upon a time was a huge, huge industry in the heart of Manhattan. And over the years, because of trade deals and, you know, union busting and moving jobs offshore in the textile industries, we've just dwindled down to where there's virtually nothing. I mean, there's still some, maybe a single digit percentage of clothing and textile products that are actually still made in this country. But I'll see if I can figure a way to get you a copy of this documentary, because it'll make you weep. But my point to bring it up was a good bit of the documentary had to do with each new generation of immigrants, and in this case, the Puerto Rican influx into New York City in the 50s and into the early 60s. Think West Side Story, you know, to give you a frame of reference. The newest arrivals to this country, some of the first jobs that they get or got were in the textile or the apparel industries in New York. And those jobs are long gone. They've been long gone for the better part of 20 years. But, you know, a tradition that made this country great in terms of American-made and union-made was, you know, has all but gone in the face of the decline and fall of the textile industry in this country. So I'll find a way to get you a copy. I guess if I get it in the form of a DVD, I can send it to the regular mailing address and it'll get to you, right?
Absolutely, but I mean...
Okay.
You mentioned the fashion industry. I don't know if you caught this story or not, but the House of Versace...
Yeah, I know the name.
Has been sued.
By
and that's probably no big deal. I mean, they probably get sued a lot. But in this case, they're being sued for discrimination because apparently they had a code that they used whenever a person of color walked through the door. Some of their goods, their wares. Have a code called D-104, which apparently means black.
Mm.
And so when a person of color walked through the door, D-104. And this is reminiscent of that stupid ass story out of a CVS pharmacy 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think Angry and I talked about it, where a black guy went in looking to buy some cheese at CVS. And he found all of the CVS workers huddled in terror in the back room.
I remember that call.
I mean, it's one thing to point out the stupidity and the mean-spirited, pig-eyed, racist hatefulness. But there's also the question of, how do we go forward with these people? Because you and I may differ a little bit. I think there's a lot more of them than most people do.
Oh yeah, there's a shitload of them, and we've got our work cut out for us, to use an old garment trade expression. But the answer to that lies in my next observation, and that is your excellent guest earlier in the program, Eric, who ran for Congress down in South Carolina. And one of the things that you talked about last week that I was hoping you would bring up tonight was the fact that for almost a century now, the number of representatives in the U.S. House has been frozen. And I sent you some links.
I did see that. I think that's fascinating.
Okay. I really hope that sometime in the coming week or weeks that we can have a conversation about this. Because right now, the typical House of Representatives district encompasses, on a good day, around 700,000 persons. Okay? If we had kept up, since 1929, had kept up, based on the census every 10 years, based on the population every 10 years, the actual number of representatives we would need to keep the district occupant level at about 30 or 40,000, there would be probably three times as many U.S. congressional representatives than there are now. In other words, now...
And I guess the thought is that would be completely unwieldy.
Well, I'm sure that's the excuse that they give. What happened to shift work divide the year up into three, okay, and have a third of them, let's say just for mathematics sake, right now it's at 435. What is 3 times 435? I'm too lazy to whip out my calculator.
1305.
Okay. Well, let's say that we divide it into three. We don't have to add a wing to the Congress. All we have to do is during the course of a congressional period, have a third of them be on the floor conducting business at any given time. And I'm sure that some of the great minds in this country could figure out a way to do that so that you don't have to have more seats. You just have to rotate the people in and out of there. Now, as far as voting on a measure all at once, I'm not sure how they would do it. There's probably a way to do it. But this notion of unwieldiness is just a false notion. If we really were interested in having the Congress be truly representative and move the district size from 700,000 people down to about 30,000 or 40,000, which in today's world is a nice, healthy chunk of people, the Congress would be more reflective of the people it says it's representing.
If indeed your purpose is to provide, you know, representation to the people.
Well, yeah, that's a big thing for it to hinge on. And it's obvious that if this system, as it currently is, has been in place more or less since 1929, when they decided to do it, then it's pretty clear what their intention is.
Congress in 1929. Who do you suppose held the majority then?
Well, I was anticipating that question. If my memory of history is reliable, it was the GOP.
You would be correct.
Ding, 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 ding. I'll take Congress for 1,000, Alex.
And of course, that kind of explains the anti-democratic nature of because, you know, what, it would be another 20 years or so, and we get this, and we get the 22nd Amendment. Now, I know, I'm opposed to the 22nd Amendment, and a lot of people aren't, but I still think it was an anti-democratic move. I think it was a bad mistake, and I'll still even say that, running the risk that Andy Kaufman there would run for a third term.
Well, did you hear the interview that Obama had, I guess today or yesterday, where he said if he were allowed to run for a third term in this last election, he would have won?
Yeah, I did see that. And, of course, that immediately engendered a furious tweet from Herr Trump. Wouldn't either have. I guess my only question is, why'd Obama do that? I mean, is he just punking him now?
Well, I don't know who he's punking, to be honest. That was my first thought. Was that comment aimed at Trump, or was it aimed at Hillary and the people that she had around her? Maybe it was meant for both of them. But then again, I'm thinking, well, yeah, right now his popularity is at like 50%, give or take a point or two, which is relatively high after 8 years. But what would it matter? If he's still up against the obstructionist Senate and the obstructionist House, the only thing missing from shit that he has to contend with is a fucking noisy 19-year-old cockatiel constantly yammering away, okay? And I apologize to the listeners.
No, never apologize for Punky.
But choke this bird, and I refuse to do that because he's good company when he's halfway quiet or pleasant in his vocalizing. But you get what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah.
That is a sobering thought. But then again, I'm thinking, you know, the answer wasn't a third term for Obama. The answer was that the Democrats ran someone who actually had a chance in hell of winning, okay, against the likes of Trump. I mean, the fact that we couldn't beat that orange menace.
But I think Obama's vote totals were massively higher than either Trump's or Hillary's.
Well, yes, in 08 and even in 12. So yeah. But anyway,
here's the other thing, just in response to what you said. A president who can be elected for more than two terms can possibly wait out a bad Congress.
Yeah.
Whereas a term-limited president has to do things completely differently.
Yeah, because the people in the House and the Senate can tell time and consult a calendar just as well as anybody else. And that's pretty much what old Mitch was up to. Okay.
And I have a sneaking suspicion that had he run, been able to run, things would have been entirely different. Because he and Bill Clinton share something in common. They like campaigning. They like pressing the flesh. They like giving speeches. She didn't.
Well, that is true. And if I'm going to fault Obama at all, and I understand the reasoning behind it, he didn't want to come across as a dashiki wearing angry black man.
Right, okay? Right.
But to me, that only carries weight with me for so long. You're the president, damn it. You know, behave in a manner that's consistent with that, and don't let the likes of these obstinate, obstructionist bastards get you down, okay? And he did, in a lot of ways, you know, what he could do, which showed up in the form of executive orders. But those are so easily undone. I mean, and we'll see that. Good God.
Some more easily than others. Once they turn into international agreements, it gets a little more complicated. And listen, we got to get out of here, but I got to tell you something real quick. I just had a note from Cheryl. She said, Punky isn't as loud over the air as I'm sure he is in person. I grew up with cockatiels that would talk with me, made phone calls kind of hard. But, you know, don't come down on Punky. People worry about Punky, Scott, okay?
Well, and she's absolutely right. It's just that what I'm trying to...
Have a thought?
You know, have a thought. It's like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? You know, which is, because I never had kids, so I wasn't inoculated to that stuff. But anyway, that's another story for another time. But hang on to those links.
I will.
And that is a conversation worth having, because that is one of the things that could possibly be fixed if conditions ever become right again.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, Scott, you and Punky have a lovely evening, and we will talk soon.
Okay, Bob. Take care.
Bye now. Scott and the one and only Punky the Cockatiel from San Diego. Time to get out of here. Thank you, one and all, for joining in on this More In Monday post-Christmas edition. Join in again tomorrow for Titanic Tuesday. I'll be here. I hope you will as well. We close the evening with about $83 to go in fundraising, so hopefully we'll be caught up by this time tomorrow evening, and we won't be shoveling out of any holes. This is live programming. I know there's a lot of programs that aren't this week. This program is. Spread the word. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room. Thank you very kindly, Sparky. And thank you to our news ninjas, to John Fox, to Ben Birch, and to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.